This week, Battle Royale stretched back closer to console gaming's origins, more context given to some of the month's biggest announcements, and in happy coincidence of our 17th anniversary, Cadence of Hyrule can be played as a dancing game. Happy birthday, OLR, and thank you for all these years.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, everybody out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight with episode number 781 for this June the 23rd of 2019. And can I say right at the top there, thank you to our announcer, Jason, who makes this show work more than you guys even know. Not just the voiceovers, but many, many, many hours of tech help and support over these years. But here in studio on the show, myself, Rob Roberts, joining you here, as well as Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm full of regret.
You looked surprised that I asked you that question, even though you would think, you know.
No, I had to think about it because, like, I still want what? That damn unagi.
Good. I'm glad that I'm glad that Dark Sakura is the type of person that will actually think about her answer to the question than just say, fine, like, do that right. How are you? Fine. How are you? You know what?
This is not fine.
Everything is rotten.
Everything's not awesome. I saw the second Lego movie.
Also joining us, of course, Techmaster Loki.
Fine.
Hi, how are you? You're a rat. As mentioned by Bobby before us, and you may have seen on Twitter and maybe in our chat right now, because we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, right after the Bobby Blackwell show. And we have been taping this show various places. The Twitch thing is a little bit newer. It's been about 6 months on Twitch, but we've been taping this show various places, as you might have heard, for the past 17 years. So believe it or not, Orange Lounge Radio started on June 23rd, 2002. That was our first episode. I tell the history every few months or so in case we have new people that stumble into OLR. So I'll do that again tonight since it is a birthday show. We all met in a gaming community for the game Dance Dance Revolution, which,
yes.
Is a game where you stomp the arrows in time with the music, which was a derivative of Beatmania, which
and
was where you
Spider
push
Stomp.
Buttons. Yeah, and Konami's B-Mani or Beatmania, B-Mani series had a whole slew of games. So it was Guitar Freaks and Pata 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 Dice and Poppin' Music, and there's plenty more. There's newer ones, too, that you might see at arcades these days, especially if you ever go to Round 1. Things like what U-Beat is like kind of a newer mm-hmm. one. Sound Voltex, that's a relatively new one. That wasn't around in 2002. But we originally started as a show dedicated to Dance Dance Revolution and all music games because we were big fans of things like Parappa and Bust a Move, Groove, depending on what country you're in. So I was on a show for many years before OLR called Under Sedation. Actually, not many years. It was really only a couple years. I mean, it feels like many years because it was a while ago. And the show went on for many years after Travis moved, but which is great. I was on for a couple years a show called Under Sedation Live, which Travis had started as a Rocky Horror Picture Show pre-show.
Yeah, that lasted.
It did last.
I meant like as just a Rocky show.
Oh yeah. Funny. It's funny because you're right. Like the Rocky Horror Picture Show and the shadow cast it was built for probably only went about another 6 months, year and a half tops after he started that show.
Mm-hmm.
But Travis went on for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, beyond that.
It was fun to be on it.
To Travis. Oh, yeah. And part of how I knew Dark Sakura was that, not only do we know each other through DDR, but Dark Sakura came and guested on USL a lot. Because, it was kind of like Loki the first few weeks. She just,
This was a little bit more toward the end. And then I filled in for Jessica a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah. But it got Jamie and I to talking about what if we had a thing like this, so like how this is for Rocky Horror, but we do something for like DDR, and we could talk about DDR tournaments, and we could talk about all that type of stuff. So that's where Orange Lounge Radio was originally born. And so for the first few years, and those of you that have found the OL archive that Dark Tetsuya has curated of the old episodes, if you go back and listen, I'm not going to say don't listen to old OLR, but it was a very different show because...
Listen with a salt lick.
Yeah, it was, we didn't know what we were doing because there weren't a lot of rules around live broadcasting at the time.
There
really weren't. Because the big players like NPR and stuff weren't in it, at all. It was a very underground type of thing. So there weren't a lot of rules, and it was because it was more community, it got off topic a lot. Like, we would talk a little bit about DDR, but then it was like, let's let's drink on air and see what happens when we have the microphones. Like, we did crazy stuff in the early years. It was fun. I don't regret any of it, for sure.
Sure.
And it brought us to where we are
I
today.
I ate almost a whole box of waffles.
But I think...
I did pay you back for your waffles. Eventually.
I think over the years, our show just kind of refined a little bit. And there did come a point when Konami kind of let Bomani kind of go away for a bit. They tried to bring it back. Here's the funny thing. So, like, DDR Extreme had come out in what, like 2001, right? And our show, no,
it was 2002.
2004. No, because our show, the show started when Max 2 was out. So,
yeah.
Extreme came out like 2003, 2004. So, that probably powered our show for another year or two. But then we kind of realized Konami's not putting anything out. There's not a lot of music games coming out. Music games are dying. We are having a problem filling the show. So, we said, and then this was right around the same time podcasting started. So we were actually doing, and people don't always realize this, we were doing two shows for a bit. We were doing our live Orange Lounge Radio about music games, and then we were doing our 20-minute to-go edition that was like, let's talk about all video. We're talking about all the video game headlines, and that's something people can download.
And it didn't last 20 minutes. We were...
Oh, well, the first episode did, and then it was the next episode was 25 minutes, then 30 minutes, and before long it was an hour. So we were doing 3 hours and then another hour. So there finally came a point, finally, when we said, you know what? And I think this was after iTunes put podcasting in it. And then, like, the To-Go edition skyrocketed. We were never more popular than when iTunes put in podcasting because To-Go skyrocketed. And we were sitting here with, like, okay, we have 20 people that listen to OLR Live, which is great. We love them. We love our OLR family. We have 2,000 people that are downloading OLR To-Go. Which of these shows has now taken over when we feel that creatively this show over here has kind of run its course and this is where the hot new shit's at? So basically, I think at the beginning of 06 or so, we ended up fusing the shows into what you hear now, Orange Lounge Radio. So, but we still consider that we've been doing a weekly show since 2002, whether it's like a Pokemon that has evolved several times.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't even my final form.
You know what? It's more like Digimon, where it can devolve too, but then it will always re-evolve and then combine with another thing to form, like, you know, another completely new fusioned Digimon, and then have, like, extra evolutions of those forms. So, yeah, we're more Digimon.
But, yeah, I mean, like, so the show's kind of evolved a few times over the 17 years, so that's, you know... and then Dark Tutsuya says, and of course in our chat, we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, and we have our live chat. We love hearing from the live listeners. Dark Tutsuya says, for the record, I know there are a couple DDR-themed podcasts out there, but I understand that's a niche audience, especially these days. Oh, yeah, no, I've been well aware that things have come full circle, and now there are DDR-themed podcasts again.
Yeah, and I know there's some that are like even relatively new as well. But...
And here's the funny thing. So we kind of said we're done with the music games specifically. I mean, we'll always love music games. We still do. But we're going to focus on all games. And then not the network, although that became a thing later on too before VOG Network. We're going to compass on all video games. So what finally happened about probably 2 years after we fused the show, maybe even only 1 year, it wasn't long after, this little company, Red Octane, that we knew from putting out the peripherals – here in the U.S. to play a lot of those import games, they said, we're going to make this little game called Guitar Hero. And before long, within probably another year of that, by the time Guitar Hero 2 and then Rock Band, it's like music games were coming back. And then Konami was like, let's get back into this, and DDR Super
and it's
happens.
Like, and then all of a sudden it was like, we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Even though we did know what we were doing, and now I don't know.
And in the meantime, we've aged, and we're not playing DDR in the arcades as much anymore. And so, you know, now that I'm pushing 41 here, I don't exactly play 9-foot DDR level songs like I used to. I'd probably be thinner if I did, but
I tried.
I'd have the stamina.
I died.
Yeah, I just, you know, if I worked
you
at it, I
just can't
would.
Do it like a lot.
Yeah, but I, you know, it's now because of round one and because, you know, Konami, I think, kind of started to embrace their worldwide audience a little more and so on and so on. I think it's like DDR is kind of back in some ways. So if this is a passing of the torch of some folks to the new generation, then that is awesome. And maybe someday they'll run out of news too, but they'll keep it going because they enjoy what they're doing and they'll find a new topic to talk about. Not that I wish that upon DDR, but that's also the reality. Nothing's going to last forever, right? So except maybe this show.
I'm going to be 70 training some intern how to
someday
be a raging bitch.
Someday the other media will realize we're out here. Someday.
You know, and that'll I kind of just I stopped caring about that a long
someday
time ago.
Someday my break will come.
Is the reality of the situation. They're telling me I'm quiet. Sorry, guys. I don't know what's going on. Maybe I have to turn up my volume a little bit. But, yeah, what? Let me ask this question while I futz with my mic here live. What keeps you guys motivated to do this show?
Boredom.
This whole time?
Boredom.
Boredom? Like, you have nothing better to do?
Not really. Stubbornness?
Honestly, like, I don't want to say boredom. Let me know how that sounds, guys.
I was joking about the boredom
Well,
part.
No, because I think there actually is something to that, because I think if we didn't have OLR, I'd be like, what do I do?
I have nothing to do tonight.
Like, what am I going to do on my Sunday night? Like, it's just like after doing something for this long, it becomes kind of a hard habit to break.
I don't know. We could like go to Dave and Buster's and go play some DDR and then maybe go to Brookfield's afterwards.
We should do that anyway.
The inevitable day this show ends, because nothing lasts forever, but even if it's in another 17 years or whatever, the inevitable day this show ends, I think that's how I'd like it to end. I think I would just like us to all, like, with the camera still running, we're just going to all put down our mics and just go to RVGL and play some DDR. And that will be how the show ends.
Well, it's not going to be RVGL because their DDR machine's broken. And they were trying to sell it the last time I was there. So it'll have to be something like round one at that point.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, yeah, at that point we'll have a round one here. So maybe it'll be a little easier to find, you know, working DDR machines. So, yeah. But anyway. Yeah. So remind me, I'm forgetful sometimes. So remind me, that's how I wanted the show to end.
Okay.
When we get there. Loki, what about you? What's kept you motivated for 17 years?
I just wouldn't know what to do on my Sunday. And it's a good way to get away from the family.
It's like a mini vacation.
I
didn't
give my answer.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dark Cyber.
I told you boredom was the joke.
Okay. So what's the real answer?
Stubbornness and, being an outspoken woman in a still male patriarchal dominated industry.
No, I mean legit. Like, you know, when we did go from 20 to 2,000 listeners, legit came in some ugly shit and ignorant shit, really. You know, and that's an unfortunate side effect of this industry that I feel like
just did something more original than get in the kitchen. I mean, fuck. I could think of a lot more original patriarchal things to say, like go churn butter. Or why are you not in the month house, you know, during your moon time or something?
Or like, if you want ways to get at Dark Soccer and tell her how to be a better person, I've got a list, you guys.
Girl.
I'm just kidding.
I'm
I adore
already
you.
Perfect.
You know that. You know that. Anyway.
I will smack.
But if you can
bitch.
Churn your own butter, I mean, that's a lot of butter. I mean, the potential for that is just like, that's like, that's elevating yourself to like, you know, I don't know.
Butter,
I have
nirvana.
Churned butter before, by the way.
All right. Anyway, so happy 17 years to us and to all of you guys who've stuck by with us for 17 years. So many of you guys have helped out, you know, just keeping this show going, your advice, your friendship, your, you know, participation, really, in our chat and when calling in at the show and all that. Yeah, you just have been such an important part of the show and a huge part of the reason why we're still doing it. And even if we've gone from 20 to 2,000, back down to 34. it's fine. You know what? It doesn't matter. And actually, there's more that listen to the podcast. I honestly couldn't tell you how many people listen to this podcast. I stopped.
And on top of that, internationally, I mean, geez.
And two things. One, I stopped looking at the numbers a long time ago. And two, I forgot the password on how to look anyway. But you know what? I don't care. I truly, truly don't care.
That's like my work, you know, with the voicemail. I was out like for a while, and they're like, you know, you really should change your voicemail. I'm like, I don't remember how to do that, so I'm just going to leave it. It's your old hours. You know, I'm like, it's fine. No one pays attention to that anyways. They just leave me a message.
Nah, they were really hyper about that when I still had to contend with voicemail at my job.
Oh, wow.
Then I took a different position where I don't have to deal with that crap.
All right. So anyway, and yeah, I mean, Darsak was talking a little personal stuff there, but I think this show, because of its length, I have often been, I don't want to say criticized, but when I go to these podcasting events where podcasters get together or anything and I talk about, yeah, we do Orange Lounge Radio, we run for about 3 hours every week. People go, really? Really? People listen for 3 hours?
Yeah.
And I go, well, some do. Not everybody does. Not everybody's got time for that. Some do. I was like, shouldn't podcasts be about an hour long? And I'm just like, that's not the show we ever did. Our show was kind of
– That's antiquated thinking.
Here's the thing. And I understand the whole like evolve or die and that whole thing. And, you know, we've tried some things.
Oh,
like
no. We'll make less money.
But
No.
Here's the thing. One, our show didn't like start because of other podcasts. We were more inspired by like traditional radio at the time. And a lot of hosts on traditional radio go for 3-4 hours.
Yeah.
So that was not unheard of, really. So that's where our roots really are, if you think about it. And B, now that things have come full circle, we're back on Twitch. I mean, think about some of your favorite Twitch streamers. Are your Twitch streamers going for 3 or 4 hours at a time? Is that abnormal? Not really. A lot go for...
We got stamina for old folks.
Which is funny, because when I do a Twitch stream at like an hour, I'm like, okay, I'm done. I want to go do something else now. So it's like...
I'm usually like that as well. But then again, I'm playing DDR, so it's like I want to die.
Yeah. So anyway. And look, hey, I'm glad you're here. Whether you listen for an hour every week, whether you listen to the whole thing every week, if you're here live, if you're here on the podcast... I don't care. I'm grateful for you being here and your support. Okay, one other question we're getting, and then I swear we're going to get into our kickoff topic, which is actually about video games. So a lot of folks on Twitch are asking, and I apologize to podcast listeners for this, but we have these things sitting on my desk, and people are like, what the hell are those? These are actually little cakes.
They're Bundt cakes.
They're little Bundt cakes in different flavors. So Darkstalker threatened last week that she was going to get us little cakes to celebrate, and they look like little spiders from a distance, but it's the frosting. It's the way the frosting kind of sits on the cake.
I figured with 3 different cakes and with them being little, we don't have to marry one cake. We can enjoy the flavors of all of the cakes.
That's right. I'm very poly with my cakes. And I think there's
poly
except the carrot cake, because that's demon.
Carrot cake is the best. Shut up. I'll eat the carrot cake.
But this one's red velvet, so, you know, that's my fave. So you get boring old chocolate, Loki. All right.
Oh, darn. It's basically the same thing, except that one's dyed red.
And doesn't have cream cheese frosting on it.
All right. Anyway, let's get into some gaming news. So the news cycle has slowed down a little bit because we are after E3 week. So most of the big companies have put out all their big announcements at this point. So we are going to be in a little bit of a lull for the next couple weeks before things build up again. However, we got a pretty big gaming bombshell dropped on us this past week with the release of Harry Potter Wizards Unite. This is the new game from Niantic publishing it in collaboration with Portkey Games and I think Warner Brothers San Francisco. This is Niantic's newest AR-based game. Niantic, of course, has been in AR gaming for several years. They made a game called Ingress that many Android users kind of noticed was on their phones. And they also made a game called Pokemon Go, which a couple years ago in that first launch, really, like, that was huge. I think... You want to talk about 17 years worth of gaming. I would say the launch of Pokemon Go is easily one of the top 10 things that has happened in gaming in the past 17 years. Like the way people were out and about walking downtown and Old Town and stuff like that. Like I had never seen anything like that in my life. And probably won't again because the popularity of Pokemon Go, it kind of went down a little bit. But it's certainly not dead. I'm going to beat Bobby Blackwolf to the comment in chat. Pokemon Go is certainly not dead. There's definitely people that still do the raids and do the collection and the events. Community days still draw a lot of people out. I see a lot of that. But every day was community day when the game first launched. But now we have Harry Potter Wizards Unite, which is kind of like, okay, well, let's take some of the things we've learned from these other games we've made, and now let's put it into Harry Potter. And so I'm curious how you guys have received Harry Potter Wizards Unite and those of you that have played it. Because I bet since so many of you tried Pokemon Go, a lot of you probably downloaded it and checked it out. I'm guessing a lot of you did. But I'm curious what your thoughts are. Darkstalker, I'll start with you. Have you had a chance to play?
Yeah, I'm like level 9 right now. I haven't been playing like a whole bunch because I've been busy.
Level 9's pretty good though, and it's no slouch.
Yeah, there's things that I like and don't like about it. You know, I hate like the whole wigs and stuff that you can do because they don't quite fit right on like a real person.
Oh, those Snapchat filters, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I don't use Snapchat either because it's stupid. Ooh, a spleen. Yeah, so like, I like that it plays a lot differently than Pokemon Go. Oh God, this is a high threat too. You know, But, like, I hate how arbitrary hitting your marks are on the one thing can be. Because, I mean, it's like you think that you're doing it perfectly, and it's like, oh, you're fair. Or, man, that one sucked. Marvelous. Perfect. What? So, yeah, there's a few things that I don't like, but for the most part, I'm having a lot of fun with it.
What about you, Loki?
I don't like it at all.
But you like Pokemon Go and you liked Ingress, right?
I like Pokemon Go. Ingress is pretty good. This just feels too... I know it's kind of stupid to call it a mobile game, but it feels too mobile game-ish, I guess. It's very, like, cheap feeling.
Lots of opportunities and, like, to spend gold.
And, like, it's just the... I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing in the game. And I've tried playing it a few times. It's crashed a bunch of times on me. And I just... I don't know. I just am not really into it at all. Like, I've tried several different times to play it, and I end up closing it out playing Pokemon Go a little bit, but I don't know. I thought I would like it, but it's just that I'm not huge in the Harry Potter universe either. I wasn't huge in the Pokemon either, though, but I don't know. Maybe I'll learn to like it, but nah, I don't see myself playing this very long.
It is a little weird to me how, like, you know, this game launches and then suddenly Niantic is like, to celebrate the launch of Harry Potter Wizards Unite, we're going to do double AP in Ingress. Well, it's 1.975, 9¾. So it's 1.975 times XP, but virtually double AP, which is that's huge. Like, to be able to level faster in Ingress is a big deal. So they do that this weekend. And then they're like, oh, in Pokemon Go, all the rewards from Go Fest, like, what is it, like half egg watching, double candy, double XP, like all these bonuses went into effect. So it's like, let's celebrate the launch of Harry Potter by making you want to play the other games. Like, I don't know if I totally get that logic, but okay, whatever.
Yeah, they should have done that like next week.
Yeah. So I play, obviously, like, I love AR games. I've played a lot. I've played a lot besides just the big ones that Niantic's done, like Jurassic Park, the Walking Dead thing.
Like, I'll play the Minecraft game when that comes out.
What's that?
I'll play the Minecraft game when that comes out.
Yeah, I'll try the Minecraft one too. You name it, I've probably tried it. Draconius Go, Garfield Go. I had that installed on my phone for like 3 days. Munzee. I've played a lot of them. And I gotta say, Harry Potter, like, it's not perfect. I've definitely noticing the, like, way more opportunities to spend gold to do things, right? Which is the real money, currency, essentially, which you get a little bit. You get a little bit of gold, but it's not a significant amount for sure to do everything you want to do. But I think as far as, like, where it's at day one, I think it's in a way better place than a lot of AR games are in day one. To the point where, I gotta admit, when I first played it, I was like, okay, I'm, like, overwhelmed. There's, like, too much ingredients.
Exactly.
Seeds,
like, I don't know what any of that stuff was. And that was very overwhelming. That's kind of where I don't really want to... Like, I didn't have time to sit through all...
explore the world.
But I do think the tutorial... I agree with that in part. And I figured it out by just basically, like, trial and error. And some internet sleuthing. Because I didn't mention yet. But this game has already been out in Australia and New Zealand for about a month. So some folks down there have already written some guides and things that the rest of us, now that it's launching in more and more countries, which I think they added like 22 more countries over the weekend. Now that more and more are playing it, we can, like, you know, go to these different resources and look up, what certain things mean. But I do think the tutorial could have been a little better in that regard in walking you through some of these things. And the fact that it's just like, wow, it's really overwhelming.
I skipped the tutorial.
Wow. I'm surprised you, got through it.
Yeah, it I don't know. I didn't think it was that hard at all to figure out. I mean, and I'm not saying that like in any kind of why did you take you so long?
Yeah.
But like I just kind of picked it up and could play right away.
Gotcha.
You know, I figured out the battle thing on my own. I figured out, you know, the wand on my own. I figured out mixing, you know, because I read the descriptions of the potions. And you manage your stuff the same way that the old sort of transfers used to go before you could multi-tap on things for Pokemon Go. So it's not like it, to me, it was pretty intuitive. And on top of that, your profession system makes me think a lot of like Dragon Age. So that made perfect sense to me, that you just have to get the right experience or right items to be able to level up your profession. You have to study, you know. So to me, it really, really seemed just very intuitive. It really seemed very intuitive to me.
I find, though, that I'm having a hard time understanding, like, what should I throw away? What should I keep? You know what I mean?
I throw away this. What I do is I look at the ingredient list and I see the ones that I have just like a bajillion ingredients on. And I've kind of gotten an idea for my rarities. So when I see, oh, I've got 50 things of pus, well, I'm going to delete, you know, 40 of them.
That's fair.
When I see I have one, you know, wormwood or something, I think, oh, I can make a cup of absinthe. I'm kidding. I'm like, okay, I need to save more of these. I need to hold on to them. Mm-hmm. And I look at my ingredient list for my potions and I'm like, okay, well, this one thing I'm out of is probably the things I'm going to need to hold on to. So,
I've prepared some lists here, before we, get into the rest of the news we have this week, which again is a little light anyway. So for those people that kind of get burned out when we talk about mobile games, I will say, you know, this game has not been a slouch. I believe I saw an article today that said the game made $300,000 its first day. Which doesn't surprise me at all. I wasn't seeing the crowds upon crowds of people. Mm-hmm. But when I went to the park and was walking around, because, you know, you can get a lot of inns and stuff at the park. There were definitely, like, I saw a family and I saw a couple. And they were absolutely playing Harry Potter because I could kind of overhear them saying, you know, things like, oh, you got to do that greenhouse and, you know, get that, do that with the plant.
And I heard people near me when I was, like, waiting at my son's coding class playing Harry Potter as well because I could hear their games playing. You know,
yeah.
The Harry Potter theme is very easy to spot.
That's true. It's very distinctive.
I actually haven't played it with any sound at all yet, so I can't critique voices or anything.
Gotcha. But I wanted to go over here some things that I've noticed as a veteran AR gamer, because I've seen a lot of clicky journalist pieces out there that say Harry Potter Wizards Unite is just a reskin of Pokemon Go with Harry Potter. And when I read that, when I see that, I can tell right away – you haven't really played those games in depth.
They some lazy bitches.
Which is, you know what? I understand. Not everybody goes. You know, so there's a lot of casual folks. And certainly at first glance, and you look at screenshots, you think, yeah, it does kind of look similar. Oh, okay, instead of throwing balls, you're tracing things. But I actually prepared a list. Here's five ways that Harry Potter is different from Pokemon Go. Number one, the battling. Totally different. And in my opinion, far better.
It was fun.
Yeah, instead of like doing raids, basically, you do these towers. You can go to a tower, and it doesn't seem.
Oh,
like...
I just meant the one-on-one battles.
Well, yeah, well, and you have those too. Sometimes they spawn in the wild. Little purple icons will do battles. I find out. So sometimes you get them in the wild. Sometimes you go to the towers, and I point here because there's one at the park over here. You go there, and I haven't quite figured out. Like, it doesn't seem like the where the tower is very important. It's just what level you do in the tower and what stone you give it. So. The stone seems like a multiplier, and the level you're doing seems like some type of reward. I have not figured all that out yet. I'm waiting for the min-maxer people to determine all that. But when you actually do the fighting in Pokemon Go, it's this. Tap, 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 tap.
Yeah, which is annoying.
That's how you fight in Pokemon Go, which, you know, for where mobile AR games were at 2 years ago, that's what they did, and it's fine at the time. But this one is definitely evolved. Like, you know, you have the little reticle, which is for aiming your wand, and it's not just where you tap on the screen, and this took me a minute to figure out. It's actually, you use, like, the bottom center part of your screen, and that is actually representative of your entire screen because it's where you're aiming your wand. So just play around in the bottom part and you'll notice how your reticle goes around. So you have to aim your reticle and hold it over a certain point because sometimes the monster moves. So you have to kind of move your finger to go with the monster. And then once it's connected for enough time, you draw a pattern with it that will come up on the screen.
It's very interactive.
Yeah, then you have to defend and all this stuff. So the battling, I think, is far more interesting. And I bet in AR it's really cool. But the very first thing I did was turn off AR mode because I know what a battery sink that is. So I turned off the AR stuff. Number two. I think there's more metagames at the beginning of the game. Remember when Pokemon Go, Pokemon Go, especially when it started day one, there wasn't a lot to do but catch Pokemon, which was fine. I mean, everybody loves Pokemon, right? But now in this, you have ingredient collecting, you have potion brewing, you have the greenhouse stuff, there's like a lot of other things to do that aren't necessarily even there in Pokemon Go yet. Number three, there are more points of interest in Harry Potter Wizards Unite because every Ingress portal crossed over into Harry Potter Wizards Unite. So you're probably seeing things that you didn't see in Pokemon Go, and the reason why...
But the Starbucks didn't.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. The sponsored stuff from Pokemon Go didn't directly come over. So your Sprints and your Starbucks are not in Pokemon Go. But, for example, in Pokemon Go, where those gyms are, where there's like Starbucks near me, there's actually a portal that got suppressed from Ingress, so it's in Harry Potter. So you see the portal is in Harry Potter instead. So there are more points of interest. But actually, since we're talking about sponsored locations, I don't know what they did in Harry Potter, but there are a ton of sponsored locations. They're all at malls.
Really? I haven't been to any malls
yet. Here, I went to the Vacaville Outlets. I was in Berkeley, ironically, for an Ingress thing over the weekend, and I stopped at the Vacaville Outlets on the way home because my fat ass wanted jelly beans. So I went to the outlet that was there, and I wanted to look at clothes, too. So I stopped there, and I brought up Harry Potter, and I was like, because I know in Ingress, I'm like, there's three portals here. There's like that signboard and like two other things. I bring up Harry Potter, Wizards Unite, and I'm like, what the hell? There's like a ton of stuff here. And I click on it, and like one of them says near Taco Bell, and it's sponsored. And the picture is a signboard that in fact is near Taco Bell. And I was like, and there was other stuff like that too. There was like it was like Far East Starbucks was there. So it's like the malls submitted all these locations. And I hear Arden Fair has a ton of stuff like that too. So, and those are, that's another one of our local malls. So yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Like a ton of sponsored stuff crossed over. So yeah. Number four, prestiging is already built into the game. So as somebody who's hit maximum level in Pokemon Go, there's not a lot to do after that point except try to build the Pokedex and collect shinies and I guess work on friendship levels. I mean, there's things to do. But as far as experience goes, that's really it. Ingress put in a prestiging. They call it recursing. But they put in something where you can kind of go back and start over, which I don't think they did it a great job of it because they were supposed to give us a power that they haven't given us yet for recursing.
Whoops, we forgot.
Well, I think it's because they're having to run the Redacted and Prime still, but that's a whole other game and a set of issues. But Harry Potter actually already has prestiging built in, sort of. Now, the max level in Harry Potter Wizards Unite is 60 is what I'm hearing. But you know how like you're filling up those pages with like stickers and stuff?
Yeah.
And you might be wondering what happens when I fill up a page. You can prestige the page and start over, and you'll get the XP bonuses reset, so you can collect XP bonuses again from the pages. And my understanding is that the pages will have a permanent bronze, silver, or gold frame around them, depending on how many times you've prestiged it. So there's a little more like, oh, okay, there's a little more to do there. And then, yeah.
I'm going to have cake.
You're going to have some cake. Go for it. You earned cake. Get a cake. Number five, the classes and the skill trees. That's kind of unheard of in the Pokemon Go, is that you actually get to pick what class you want to be. There's three classes. There's the Aurora, something like that. Aurora, which is the DPS. There's the Magizoologist. Magizoologist. Why would you go away and get cake when I need you, Darksider? The Magizoologist, which is, I guess, part tanky, part healy, and then Professor. That's the easy one. That's the one that I'm playing, which I think is like a support class type of thing. And so it actually matters when you go into some of these fortress battles. You can play with other people, and like as a professor, I can actually put heals on somebody while they're battling somebody else. And then you actually have a skill tree that you build out using pages that you collect from doing battles and things like that. So it's kind of neat. Like it's a lot more in depth than we've seen from your typical Niantic game so far. So yeah, there you go. So those are five ways that Harry Potter Wizards Unite is different from Pokemon Go, and that I am really not seeing in a lot of those articles that are out there, because I bet those people played it for an hour and then went to go write their articles. So just saying. Anyway, and you kind of perked up at some of that stuff I was saying. Some of that make you maybe want to go check it out again, or now you're already over it? We'll see. Now I'm not going to be like the game's biggest stand or the game's biggest defender. I also have a list of four so far. I couldn't think of them all, but I have a list of four ways that this game needs to improve ASAP. My four items for how this game needs to improve. Number one, right now there's really no point to the friends list. I see all these posts on Facebook and Twitter that are like, add me, add me, add me. And right now there's really no reason to do it. The professor battling, I understand, or I'm sorry, professor battling, the tower battling may have something there where like having the people on your friends list is kind of helpful and some of that stuff, but there's no gift sending. Somebody joked that maybe they'll have owls that you can send out or something. Maybe that'll be a thing later on. So, but right now there's no gift sending. There's nothing like that. So there's like no reason to have friends, and there's especially no reason to have friends long distance. So sorry.
Yeah, you don't need friends.
Sorry I haven't given out my friend code on Twitter or anything like that. But like right now, there's no reason to have friends that are far away in the game right
now. There's no reason to unite with these wizards.
No. So, but hopefully.
And solo this whole
hopefully
thing.
Hopefully there will be. Yes. Bobby Blackwell says, there is no reason to have friends. Pretty much. I said it. Print it. Put it on the back of the box.
Isn't that what I just said?
Yeah, it is. Here you go. All right. Number two. Thank you. I like how she just knows to give me red velvet. Number two in the airing of grievances. Adventure Sync needs to be in this game, like right now, because it's a battery drain to walk those little port keys around, which I didn't even talk about. That's a sixth way that this is very different than Pokemon Go. Those port keys, yeah, they're kind of like eggs superficially, is that you put the key and, you know, you walk a certain distance. But I would bet you any article that says port keys are the equivalent to eggs in Pokemon Go didn't hatch one. They didn't walk 2 kilometers yet, because guess what? They don't just hatch and poof, you have a new picture. No, you have to go in there and you do it. And then you kind of end up in like a forced AR thing, but like not necessarily in your own room.
VR.
Yeah, I don't even know if I call it – maybe. Darksakura is more VR than AR, I guess.
AR is an augmented reality.
Okay, you need to say this on a mic, Darksakura. Come back. Like, I'm not going to relay everything.
So AR is augmented reality, where it is your real-life area with augmenting to it. VR is virtual reality. So these little houses that you go to with your port key are virtual spaces. So it is VR.
Okay, put the knife down when you're talking to me, though. just kidding. It's honestly, it's a little bit of both, because it does start AR. You do see your own world, you tap on things. Yep, it's a little mix of both. That's really where I got to leave it at. But you kind of go in this thing and you like have to look around using your phone as a way to look, and you want to tap all these little lights. It's like a Where's Waldo thing. It's not just like a hatching thing. So it's something that's different. But like, it's really ridiculous that you have to have your game open while you walk 10 kilometers. Like, that's not going to happen. So Adventure Sync like needs to be there.
And the thing while you're driving, you know, the slow driving under 20 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't work anymore either.
No.
I was going 10 and it knew.
No.
What if I was on my bike?
But your character does fly a broom, which I think is really cute. Bobby Blackwell says Microsoft's term is mixed reality. I think that's a good way to put it, mixed reality. All right. Why no record in chat says it takes some real restraint to actually slice those little cakes. I just grab a fork. Darksakura wants to make sure everybody gets a piece of what they want.
I also wanted to make sure that if people wanted to try the other cakes,
yeah,
that there's a little bit you can have a small piece of it.
That's good. I like that.
But carrot cake is my favorite.
All right. Let's see. Number three, my third grievance out of four. The greenhouse mechanic is too weird and it's broken. You go in there and you can plant a seed and water it, and then other people can come by and improve it. But like, you go to a greenhouse and you plant something, it's like, this is going to hatch in 7 hours. Great. I'm not going to hang out here for 7 hours and wait for it to hatch. So unless you like live by one.
Work has a greenhouse.
Okay.
And it had my same plant from the one I planted by my house.
Interesting.
So
I don't think it carries over like that. I think that's just luck. I think that's a coincidence.
No. It was the plant. It had the same timer and everything. So I think it remembers that you've planted one at a greenhouse, and it doesn't matter which one you go to.
Interesting. Okay, if that's true, then I would like them to be able to explain that, because I was not getting that impression at all. But I've been walking around as I've been playing Ingress for the AAP, getting a lot of like stops in greenhouses. So I probably didn't get that, I guess. Anyway. So yeah, I think they just need to refine it. I think if it does really work the way Darksider is describing, I guess that's a little better, that it would move to you wherever greenhouse you're at. But like, not everybody lives on a greenhouse. I see a lot of you like, oh, the closest thing near me is on a greenhouse. That's great. But you have to realize these games get a lot of shit in rural areas as it is. So they need to do something a little better, I think, with that.
I actually, the little park by my neighbor has one of each.
Huh.
So I have an inn, a greenhouse, and a tower.
If you go, I don't want to say where I live, but if you go down to the park, not the one right here, but the other one that's bigger, that's further down, there's like 5 inns, 2 fortresses, there's like tons of stuff.
Let's go
it's
for
great. So, anyway, lastly, number four, there is way not enough space to store stuff.
Yes.
I need more indication what to keep and toss. And they're using it as a way to sell extra space, and it's not – they're really gouging you for that
what
space.
What is this? No Man's Sky?
It's silly.
Early No Man's Sky?
Now, I suppose a fifth thing I could be critical about is the spell energy, but I will give Niantic and the team, Portkey and all that, I will give them props because they addressed the spell energy thing already. They said, okay, we hear you guys on the spell energy thing, so you're going to start with more spell energy. There's a gift right now in the store for 50 free spell energy. If you haven't got that yet, by the
way,
guys, go to the store and scroll down to the bottom. It's there. You get 50 free spell energy right now. We're going to make inns give more energy. All greenhouses will give energy. So, like, they've already, like, tried to address it. Is it perfect? No. But am I really encouraged that it took 48 hours for them to address it? Yes, because that's not the Niantic I know. So I don't know if Portkey's doing the management on that or what, but that's pretty outstanding. So, yeah. So anyway, I know I talked a lot in depth about that, but I think there's a lot with this game, and it is kind of the biggest thing in gaming this week since E3's over. So, yeah. Anything else you guys want to say on Harry Potter Wizards Unite?
I'm just really enjoying the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it. I suppose it could motivate me to get back out and walk, but it's 100 degrees, so no.
Yeah. It's hard to juggle the different games because one of my Ingress pals is like, so you're going to play three games now? And I'm like, honestly, Pokemon Go is on the back burner until I have reason to play it, like community days or things like that.
But I'm sure already, which I need to get shinies from you anyway, but I was already playing Pokemon Go. I was playing Idle Pouring. I still play Idle Pouring. I'm playing Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, and now I'm playing this with some Ingress thrown in for, you know, lulz.
Yeah. SG100 Matt in our chat at twitch.tv/VogNetwork says, the amount of data it uses is keeping me from playing it on Wi-Fi for now. Niantic knows that it uses a bunch of data, but I'm sure it'll get better after updates.
Well, there's like guides online on how to save the data. You can turn off downloading over wireless networks, and then you can actually set an option to download all the content to save on some of that.
Yeah, I actually did that, even though that's going to eat up like 3.5 gigs on your phone. I downloaded all the content. But I am fortunate where I have unlimited internet on my cell phone, and these AR games are a big reason why. So it's not a concern for me. However, your concern is completely valid because I know there are a lot of people on metered plans. And so Niantic kind of needs to be reasonable about that if they want people to play that game a lot. So
figure out how to fucking build your mobile game clients, because like it's ridiculous that my phone should be set on fire and crash half the time. Like this right here, this I'm sure is, oh, there it goes. It was like glitching the hell out. It already
flashing.
Crashed once.
Yeah, wow.
You know, and I don't know.
Mine got really hot. I was going to do a break segment tonight to talk about Wizards Unite, but when I tried to go out in the sun and walk and record, my phone was like, nope, not doing it. It was like getting so jittery slow, like the frame rate. And I have an iPhone 10. Like, I don't, you know, it's not exactly an old phone. So, yeah, there you go. YYR in chat says, wait, you have a bandwidth cap on your house internet, but none on your mobile phone? Correct. I have a bandwidth cap from Comcast on my house internet, 1 terabyte, but not on my mobile phone from AT&T Unlimited, whatever, because all the carriers got in an unlimited war not that long ago.
Because they just throttle your service once you get so many.
The cable companies ought to just go into the unlimited space. I'm sure we'd all love that. This gets off topic a lot, but I think a big reason the cable companies kind of did the data limits to begin with was piracy. I think piracy was a huge reason they did this in the first place. But now that we're getting in this, I think there's a lot less piracy than there used to be. I think, I'm not saying it's not there, I'm not naive, but I think there's a lot less than there used to be because of things like Spotify, Apple Music, et cetera. Less people use things like Napster or downloading MP3s and those types of archives. And YouTube, you can listen to a lot of music on there. And then when it comes to TV shows, now because of Netflix and Hulu and that stuff, less people download them. Again, I'm not naive. Yes, people do download things like Game of Thrones and stuff because people get sick of the whole, I'm not going to pay $10 for this, $10 for that, $10 for this. So, but I would say that people are probably legitimizing some of it and maybe pirating the rest that isn't on their preferred service. But anyway, I'm getting into a digression a little bit there. But yeah. So anyway, ActDev says, even then you may have unlimited, but you don't have unthrottled internet. I got to admit, I've not really had a problem. I mean, if they throttle me, I don't really notice. So, because I'm not doing anything that big on data. I'm just playing stupid games. I'm not trying to, like, download big things very often. So,
and I have the rollover data, so I never run out.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. That's really nice. All right. So anyway, that's plenty on Harry Potter Wizards Unite. I know we talked at length about that, but again, it is kind of the big thing going on in gaming this week. Let's talk about our gaming week outside of that. What other types of things have we been doing this week? So, Dark Sakura, how was your gaming week outside of Harry Potter?
Bloodstained.
Oh, yeah. I haven't gotten to play it yet because my Kickstarter code is on the Switch. So I have to wait another week.
Oh.
So tell me all about it.
Oh my God. It's great. It is beautiful. The music is beautiful. The game is great. Even the voice acting, because Dan's playing it in English. The voice acting is good. The scenery is amazing. I'm really hoping that Boundary Break, one of the channels I watch on YouTube, does like a behind the scenes Boundary, you know, break stuff. You know, show what's like behind those background scenes. It feels like Symphony of the Night. It really does. It seems a little bit harder though. But the controls are pretty responsive. You get twists and turns in some of the characters. The little universe that was built up for it is pretty damn good. It's good when you can go into a game and it already has lore behind it. And then voice actors. Zangetsu is voiced by David Hayter. So we've been making Solid Snake jokes, of course. And then there's a character by the name of OD, who's a librarian, it's Alucard's voice actor. So we've been calling him Alucard the whole time. And then like there's even like some of the nods to Symphony, like you can sit in the chairs. And your fairy familiar will sit on you. You can get Shovel Knight as a shard power. You can get Shovel Knight's armor and turn into Shovel Knight, and it is Shovel Knight licensed. I'm just trying to think of some of the other little neat things. You know, you've got your bell tower. You can jump through. You've got clock towers. You've got train rides. You've got just all kinds of amazing things, and it really is perfect. And there's a scene that I put up on my Facebook.
I was just about to ask this. What was that thing with the piano that you had on Facebook?
So there's a garden that you can go into that just has a piano sitting under a canopy, and if you do it without the fairy familiar, then you just play the song. But if the fairy familiar is with you, she'll sing it, and that's pretty cool. I'm just trying to think of some other neat things in there too. One thing that actually, just me being an art nerd, they talk about photography and like, what's a photograph? And so one of the characters explains how daguerreotypes work, and it's absolutely, absolutely amazing. Oh, and one other thing is like when eventually when you get a certain power, you can do the thing where you can knock OD's chair into the air like you could with the shopkeeper. And just keep bouncing it up and down and up and down. And he gives you stuff just like the shopkeeper did. So some of the powers are really, really crazy. And I don't want to spoil it because Dan and I were doing blind plays through it. But
yeah, don't ruin it for me because I want to experience it next week.
But eventually, though, you need to think outside of your present box. But it really just kind of takes you on some twists. There's hidden stuff in places. Just explore everything. Take the fairy with you.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm excited to try it myself. So you give it your seal of approval. Because I know a lot of people were worried about it. Like some of the early versions that came out kind of didn't run good. And there was concerns.
I didn't see any issues. I mean, some of the bosses are fucking hard as balls. I mean, and we're at the end of the game.
Oh, wow.
Lots of hidden stuff, though. Lots of hidden areas to find, filling in your map. You know, it's got all the great stuff that Symphony of the Night did. And on top of that, it's charming in its own right. Not just because of nostalgia. If Symphony of the Night had never existed and this just came out, this would be what Symphony of the Night was. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I do.
In terms of the love behind it and popularity, it doesn't need a Castlevania name behind it. It is standalone.
Great.
Okay.
All right.
And then, of course, my usual other games on my phone.
All right.
Oh, and we just got a new pinball.
Oh, you got a new pinball.
You know one I've been wanting for a long fucking time?
There's a lot. Big Bang Bar.
Fuck. We have a Black Rose.
Oh, okay.
So now we have like three done by the same guy. So we're like, are we going to sell one? And Dan's like, I'm not getting rid of my creature from the Black Lagoon. I'm like, damn. But he's like, do you want to lend out World Cup soccer to a friend of mine? No. Why not? Because I said no. It was literally that. Well, that's not a reason. Yeah, no is a reason. No, because I don't want to is a reason. So now we have to find a place to put Black Rose.
All right.
He can lend out Shadow or something else or Indiana Jones. Yeah, we got an Indiana Jones as well.
Oh, my gosh. It's ever changing at your place. Well, your place is an arcade. It's great.
All right, so that's it.
All right. Let's go to Loki. How was your gaming week, Loki?
I didn't play very much this week. It's been stressful, but I did play just mobile stuff, so a little bit of Pokemon Go. I did open up Ingress because I was checking to see if the portal that I submitted actually got accepted. Ironically enough, not the location I wanted submitted, but the yogurt place next door. There's a mural on the wall of yogurt, frozen yogurt, and that got accepted as a portal. So, but it hasn't been rejected yet, so there's still a chance. But it is awfully close to where that would be, so I'm skeptical that they're going to accept it.
I just had my first submission in Prime go through, because you know you can submit in Prime now. So and when you submit in Prime, you can do two pictures, and you can put justification, which you can't do in the original. So it helps it in getting through OPR. So I had my first one get accepted. And it only took a week, but it was like a really obvious. Like it was an amphitheater at a park that somehow was not a portal. So I think it was a very obvious yes candidate, you know. I doubt anybody voted
no. It's fine. It could take a while. So there's that. And then what else? I just worked a little bit on programming, and yeah, that's about it. Not too much.
All right. My gaming week, a lot of the similar types of stuff, things like Diablo 3, still cutting away at that, and then Final Fantasy 14 gearing up for the expansion. I did play more of the Castlevania collection this week, and I did something I have never done before, and I'm very excited about it.
Well,
I beat Castlevania 1, which nice. I've never done before. Well, before you give me those kudos, Dark Soccer, the reason why is because they actually patched the Castlevania collection this week with the Japanese versions of the game. So instead of the Famicom disc version replacing Castlevania 1, they took the cartridge from 1993 because they re-released it on cartridge when they added easy mode. And I beat it with easy mode. So not quite maybe deserving of all those kudos, but hey, I got to see that ending I never seen.
Does it play with the disc music though?
Unfortunately, no, because it's cartridge, so it doesn't.
The disc music was good.
Yeah, but what is really cool about Castlevania, the fact that they added the Japanese stuff, is that Castlevania 3 does use the disc version, and you get the disc music.
Good.
And I got to tell you, if you have Castlevania Collection, go play Castlevania 3, and that is probably the best game that shows you how having an additional sound channel on the Famicom disc system really elevated the 8-bit songs. So, yeah, check that out. That's really all I have to say with that. So, Tiger Claw in chat says, Rob beat Castlevania 1. Did he use any of those speedrunning strats to beat the levels? No, I didn't. It felt like some of them I was going through pretty quick, but again, I was on easy mode. And actually, I remember in one part, I tried to do the thing I remember in the second level. You can, like, jump and get hit by a Medusa head, and it knocks you up on the platform, so you can actually skip this whole section. But, like, it wouldn't work. And I don't know if – I think they might have eliminated the knockback in easy mode, I think is why. So it didn't work. Because I remember, like, I was thinking –
yeah, maybe.
Weren't these mobs supposed to do a knockback, and none of them were doing it? So you keep the doubles and triples that you get. You don't lose them when you change your weapon, and you lose way less health. So it makes it, like – it makes it so much easier to get through the game. So, yeah. Let's see. Bob Coffee in chat says, Japanese Castlevania 3 also has a lot more reasonable difficulty. American version is way, way harder, way harsher damage. So, and Orange Wright's confirming what I thought, where Castlevania Easy Mode didn't seem to have the knockback. So, anyway, if you have the Castlevania Collection, just a heads up, it got patched with that Japanese patch. And I think I heard the Arcade Collection got it, too. And I would imagine Contra Collection must have it. If not, it's getting it real soon, I'm sure. So there is that. Okay. And that was my gaming week. So let's move on. We're going to get into some gaming news. There's been a little bit going on throughout the gaming world. Even if E3 was last week and we got all the big headlines then, we have a few things to talk about tonight.
Yes,
so
this is the week in history in which EA decided to try to redefine definitions of what a loot box is. and it's just ridiculous. So there was this whole UK Parliament's Digital Culture, Media, and Sports Committee where Kerry Hopkins of EA had made some statements when they were asking them whether they considered loot boxes to be an ethical feature. And she stated, "We don't call them loot boxes. They instead, EA refers to them as surprise mechanics. It's like, you know, a blind
surprise. Got your wallet."
Well, they're saying it's like a blind bag toy thing that you would get in the store where, you know, you don't know which toy you're going to get. Sorry, that doesn't really cut it. There's a major difference between those. One, loot boxes are digital purchases, which the value of what's inside them can greatly differ from what you're getting. And it's not like where, you know, one, especially with a lot of the EA games, like sports games and stuff, where there's a new game every year, that stuff doesn't carry over. So you're basically getting it for a year. Whereas, like, if I bought a blind bag toy, like, say, for example, we tend to buy some of these Lego minifigure blind bags. Yeah, you don't know what you're going to get in there, but it's always a Lego minifigure. So you're always getting something, and that minifigure is not going to disappear in a year.
Well, I can think of the biggest, you know, difference is that, like, because, okay, so what about, like, when I used to buy Magic the Gathering cards, which I'm sure some of you still do.
Yeah.
You might get something of a very high, great value in there. And, you know, generally you're going to get so many land cards and some of this, but you might get, like, something really good in there, right? But here's the big, big difference between Magic the Gathering cards and loot boxes. If I get cards I don't necessarily want, I can trade them and give them to somebody else. I can trade. I can, you know, it's kind of like a currency I can use and trade with other people, and that was the whole point of a trading card game. But you can't really – and it's just like your blind boxes. If you don't get what you want, you trade with somebody else to get the one you want.
Exactly.
You can't do that in loot box games.
And you can't
– most of them.
And you can't just, like, call it something else and say, see, we're not legal. Like, you know, I didn't murder that person. I just aided in his early death. You know, it's like you can't just – call it something else and say, see, can't get us now. They're not loot boxes. And ironically enough, you know, was it not even a week or so ago when they had the whole Star Wars thing and they're talking about their brand new Star Wars, it's not going to have loot boxes in it. So does that mean that are going to be loot boxes in it because you're not calling them loot boxes anymore? It's going to have a surprise. Surprise! You're getting fucked again. Surprise! It's a mechanic in which we're going to demand money from you.
I didn't murder them, Loki. I put surprise poison in their drink. But it wasn't murder. It was a surprise. Right?
Their body got riddled with surprise projectiles. And it's stupid. It's stupid. And it's funny is, like, even the people at, you know, that hearing, they fucking saw right through it. And it's just like, I don't know what they thought that they were going to do. Like, pull one over on them. Like, all of a sudden they're going to be like, you know, we never thought about it like that. I guess this is completely legal. Bye-bye. I mean, like, what the fuck did you think was going to happen?
The other thing with those, I was going to say on those, like, Happy Meal toys and stuff where you don't know, like, which toy you're going to get. Like, actually, if you're just really nice to the employees and say please and thank you and act like a nice person and not, like, you know, an asshole at customer service and all that, like, usually you can just ask really nicely, is there any way you could get one with the, you know, bunny beanie baby or whatever? Because that's the one my kid doesn't have. And they'll do it, like, if they can. So I guess – back in the day, maybe I'm thinking a long time ago when I had a bunch of friends that worked at McDonald's. Like, they would – like, if I wanted something, I would get it. They would get it for me, you know? But, yeah. Like, I don't know. Maybe today they're harder to do that stuff with. But
to be fair –
a lot of times they can pull strings, you know?
To be fair, in this case with EA stuff, on some of the Ultimate Steam stuff, you can actually trade those cards that you get in there. But they do – like, I mean, there's – they have patents for, like, predatory, like, schemes to basically try to lure you into, you know, making more purchases. They've got, like, Activision has some of these stuff that they've patented. They have whole, like, firms that are dedicated to this stuff. You can't tell me. And the fact also there's people that have said, like, listen, I've dropped, like, $20,000 because I just – can't stop buying these things. I'm addicted to it, like, you know, gambling. And they're just ignoring all that stuff. And, like, I get it.
Yay, capitalism.
But here's the thing. It's never going to end until people stop buying them. And that's the problem. You're never going to have that happen if people keep, you know, putting money into it. So stop it, people.
Do you have another comment on this, Star Sakura?
No, just yay capitalism.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of it. Let's see. YYR in chat says, BRB, going to politely ask my gacha mobile game for that 5-star legendary I've been trying to pull. Questbuster says, they can be done right, but when the focus is on companies that make them pretty terrible, they just paint everything with that brush. And ActF says, I don't mind loot boxes if done correctly and not shoved down, and especially if the loot boxes have accessories that have items that can help you win a game. Well, you don't necessarily want something that's like you're gonna like you need it to beat the game. Or I think another example of like how this went really wrong was when they put like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like Darth Vader was in a loot box in Star Wars.
And they
right?
also had pay to win stuff that was in there.
And that's kind of that's especially when you're showing that shit in the trailer. That's shady, you know. So that's all.
But it's EA, and they knew the fuck they were doing.
But I said like if you want to put a pink Darth Vader costume in a loot box, that would be much different and awesome, actually.
And they said no one wanted that. But yes, no, I understand that EA said that because it would break canon.
Well,
but then at the same time, you know, we have like all these different heroes from different timelines in the Star Wars universe running around together and. You know, that doesn't break canon.
Yeah. No, I don't. It's silly. It's ridiculous. And we're still recording for our podcast, but for some reason our Twitch dropped live, and I noticed our internet just went like, boo, like it just cut out. But I think it's a hiccup. I think we're back up and running now. The joys of live internet. But I saw when people started complaining in chat, people was like, EA's killed the stream for them talking too much. I can see people in chat, and then I looked over, and the little box on OBS is like, orange. Red. And so yeah, we just had a little hiccup. Little hiccup in the server going to Twitch. That's weird. But like I stayed in chat and everything else is working, so I don't think it was our internet. Yeah. Oh well. Things happen. Sorry guys. We do our very best, but there's going to just be things that are out of our control. You're right. EA might be trying to pull the plug. That's right. ActDef. It was not an internet outage. It was a surprise hiccup. That was ActDef's words.
Surprise break.
A surprise hiccup. All right. That was just a feature of our show. All right. That's why you all show up live. All right. Let's move on. So we've talked a lot about Niantic already, but, you know, they're stepping up to be a major, major game maker in this industry. And they've made another big move this week. They bought another company. They've bought a few because they bought like a profile making company or something a while ago. I remember that. But we haven't seen what they've done with that really yet, unless some of that technology went into those like very elaborate avatars in Harry Potter, maybe. I don't know. But
avatars?
If you go into your little cart, those like Snapchat filters that she said she liked, you can put like wigs on your character and stuff, but it's
not that elaborate.
It's about as, well, it's silly. It's more elaborate than Pokemon Go, that's for sure. But anyway, Niantic also has purchased a company called Sensible Object. Sensible Object is based out of London, and they are probably best known for making combination digital and tabletop games. Their first game was called Beasts of Balance, where you go into a fantasy world and you have physical stackable creations, but they translate into digital points scoring. It kind of, I don't know why, but I'm reminded of like Drop Mix, right? Which is like the card game by Harmonix, but you use a phone app to play all the music. It's kind of like, and that game is really cool if you've never played it. Like it's, even if you don't really care for music games, just to kind of see that technology in motion is like really awesome. So, so we don't know why Niantic has purchased this. A lot of folks wondering, is it related to Harry Potter or Pokemon? Maybe there'll be little physical Pokemon that do something. Could it be related? I've seen a thought that maybe Ingress, how Ingress has an anime, maybe there's going to be a board game at some point of Ingress that might tie in. Who knows? But I think it's a given. You know, if Harry Potter's made as much money as it did out the gate, Pokemon Go is still continuing to rake in the money. Ingress is cute. Ingress has a passionate community. You know what? I'll say that from firsthand. Ingress has I didn't talk about it in my gaming week, but I went to Berkeley to do this thing called Mission Day in Ingress, and it was still like it wasn't a huge crowd, but it was 150 people that turned out to do different
still
missions.
Quite a bit.
Around that. Yeah. So it has a passionate community. We'll say that. So I'm sure Niantic's not stopping there. And they know what their next game's going to be. We just don't know what it is yet. And will it be on an existing IP already? Who knows? That should be – we haven't done listless in a long time in this show. That should be something we do in the future. What IP should Niantic make a AR game out of next? I think that would be a fun one.
That would be pretty fun.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. What do you think about like board game meets mobile game type of thing? You
guys Eye of Judgment?
Yeah, you can't help but think of the Eye of Judgment on PS3. You're right. You're right. But
well, it's more AR gaming. That's not necessarily a board game.
But their hybrids are AR games.
Yeah, that's what Niantic does is AR games, though. So, yeah.
I think, though, if you did a collectible card game that had that AR component, then that would be pretty fun because then you could trade your cards. You know, like you're talking about before with the loot box thing, you know, have your cards that you can trade around and build your decks. What if they did Magic that way? That would be cool to have, like, the battle happen while you're playing the game and not have to sit in front of your computer and, you know, play something that's, you know, 70 years old.
So maybe, I mean, honestly, you're not describing something that's that terribly different from Eye of Judgment. But with Eye of Judgment, you had to have this PlayStation 3, you had to have your camera and all this set up. Now maybe you just have to have your mobile phone.
See, that's how it should be.
Yeah.
And even better if you've got, like, one of the VR kits for it. Something like that.
Is the gag of 17 years of this show going to be that Eye of Judgment was merely ahead of its time?
Kind of it was, though. I mean...
Oh, my God. I'm going to cry.
You're matching your shirt now.
I feel like we've just had this big, like, explosion here on the show is that for our 17th birthday, we finally just come to this realization. Eye of Judgment was just ahead of its time.
I kind of think that it was. I mean, we made a lot of fun of it. But maybe it's just because, you know, VR and AR were not big things then.
Well, and the name was really bad.
Okay.
The Brown Eye of Judgment?
The Brown Eye of Judgment. All right, listen. I still remember that.
Let's hold up here, okay? It was not ahead of its time. It was a fucking dumb idea is why. And I'll tell you why it was a dumb idea. Because it added fucking nothing to the game. All it did was animate the stupid cards that you put down on the board. That's it. You were still playing a card game. Just like you would play like Magic the Gathering, except it just animated some stupid shit. But then you had to set up your stupid camera and have it hooked up to a PlayStation and a TV to view, ooh, it's a battle happening.
Whereas if you did it with your phone would move around.
But they already have that. It's not engaging enough, you know, it wasn't engaging enough as a standalone game. It's not going to be engaging with this stupid shit that you have to tie to it. So, no, it was a crappy game. It's not ahead of its time. It was garbage.
Well, I just got told. I don't know. There are elements of it that were maybe...
They had two chances to bring that stupid game out, and it couldn't sell a million copies combined, so too bad. Get over it. It'll never happen.
God, all I want is Sony out there listening, maybe. All I want, put Eye of Judgment on mobile so we can get it a million downloads because it'll count. All right, anyway. Anything else you want to say on that, Darsagra?
No.
All right, then why don't we move on to our next story?
Oh, it's me anyway.
Yes, it is.
Steam. I haven't looked at my Steam account in an age. But Steam is adding new tags for their games. You know, like right now they have like difficult or action or Souls-like, like talking about Sekiro, which is hard as fuck. So, you know, when you click on the tag, it takes you to a page about the tag. You can see what it is. Well, they are doing LGBTQ plus tags now. So these are games that are either related to LGBTQ plus issues or have interest, or I think also maybe including the developer, maybe. but it's to help games that may be a little more niche or smaller be more discoverable, you know, especially now that people will look for games that are going to represent the world they live in or the world they want to live in.
Sure.
You know, like when Dream Daddy came out, what would the average person think if they just see a bunch of dudes and Dream Daddy? They wouldn't know it's necessarily about, you know, man daddies.
No, I gotcha.
Excuse me, that cake's that bad with you. It could be looking for a sugar daddy. You know what they should do?
What?
They should do a sequel and call it Bear Hunt. Bears and cubs and otters, oh my.
Oh my. There's animals for everything. It's neat. I mean, happy Pride. It definitely does seem like, hey, it's nice to see a company actually doing something besides releasing a rainbow logo for Pride. That's pretty cool. And I think, you know, there's a lot of, especially when it comes to, like, the stories that really go in depth, there's a lot of great games out there that explore, you know, same-sex relationships. And maybe if you're somebody that wants to see yourself represented in there because you grew up in a world where it was always, you know, hero rescues princess and, you know, they live happily ever after and that sort of thing. You know, if you want to find something that maybe is a little more representative for you, I think it's cool that Steam is allowing like a way to do that.
So. And this actually comes though after the non-approved tags lost their hub. And it did leave a lot of developers just behind because they had made these games to tell queer stories. Mm-hmm. And so by putting it back and keeping it, you know, as something now that's a true curated tag, it puts that visibility back on there. And this isn't, you know, just rainbow capitalism. This, they make no money off of putting that on there other than maybe whatever revenue might come. I don't exactly know how that works. But at any rate, this is really, really good for visibility, mm-hmm. and good for people, for representation. And there's a quote in here from one of the people who actually contacted Valve directly about the lack of a tag. He said, people are going to be shitty no matter what. The tag is important.
Yeah, very cool. Pixel Pacas in chat says, interesting timing with how they recently blocked a non-explicit lesbian visual novel from releasing on Steam, but they later allowed it after people spoke up about it. So there may still be some problems with how things are being implemented consistently, but, you know, it's nice to at least see them kind of take this, you know, step and make it a little easier because the Steam store kind of can be a mess.
So I attributed that to the wrong person.
Oh.
It's a developer named Nohua, or Nohua is like a, I guess an acronym, but it's someone on their Discord chat who said that the people are going to be shitty no matter what.
Yeah, but I'm going to be honest, like I don't usually do the click tags on Steam. I realize other people do, so that's cool. But like if you like Twitter for me has been a huge and Facebook to some extent, even though there's so much garbage on Facebook to sift through. But and there's a lot of garbage on Twitter too, quite honestly. But I try to curate different lists of people. And like, you know, I have a list of like basically like gay gamer and, you know, LGBTQ plus gamers that I follow on Twitter. And honestly, if people recommend a game because they're like, oh, this story was like so good and like I felt seen by it, I'm way more likely to check it out based on that. Like nothing is ever going to beat a personal recommendation in that regard. So I kind of feel like the best way, if you want to find games like that, like the internet is a great place. Find a little club, find your niche out there of people like you. Like, you know,
find your tribe.
Yeah, find your tribe. That's a great way to put it. You know, there's plenty of gay gaming, bear gaming groups or whatever on Facebook. I'm sure Dark Sakura, I mean, I don't know if there's necessarily ace gaming groups, but there's certainly got to be ace groups on Facebook, and the topic of gaming surely comes up.
Well, you know what I asked at the first GamerX that I attended for Borderlands? I was like, when are we going to see ace characters? Like, actually, we have one. There you go. And I was like, ooh, that's right, because I didn't see any semblance of romantic anything. And now we've got more ace characters, you know, on TV or in shows or in comics. And I'm really glad to see the representation. You know, I would like for, you know, when you're browsing that tab, you know, then you have like maybe a sub thing, you know, has ace character, has pan romantic intersex character, you know, something like that.
I mean, yes and no. Like, I just want to see descriptions to help me figure it out. But at the same time, I don't. Our community is already so fragmented and so segmented. I feel like that togetherness is something we have to work on a lot. But like, I don't want to discount what you're saying either, because I do see the advantages of that. But I just worry about having all those little buckets.
I'm gonna say one thing. Okay. That same argument has been used against trans women and queer women from organizing in their own spaces to discuss the issues within the LGBT community.
but I think a video game store and that are two, like, super different things. But also, I just accept the fact trans women are women, period. Like, there's no debating that. But
their struggles are going to be different than...
I understand. Yeah. But shouldn't that... Like, that could be in a description or something. I just don't want it...
Well, I understand that, but I'm just meaning, like, the descriptions will say something, hey, has characters like this in it.
Here's my point. Here's my real point. Is that, and it actually kind of piggies back on what you said in response there, is that, like, gay dudes kind of need to see those trans stories and the people that are also in their family. Because, right? So, and that's why I said what I said.
The biggest transphobia that I see... Second to straight white men is gay white men. I see a lot of misogyny in amongst, you know, gay men.
Oh,
a lot
of misogyny.
Did you
see that Tales from the City? There's a scene in it that'll knock your socks off. Oh my God.
I just knew the thing about the sisters in vodka.
Oh yeah, that's
kind of true.
That's the first episode. That's cute. Yeah, yeah.
So. Now I'm going to have to watch that show because I hear there's a lot. If it's a misogynist getting, like, you know, punched in the face, I'm down for it.
The person does not get their comeuppance, if that's what you're hoping for, but it's definitely a scene where I think it makes the viewer kind of like it's a viewer thinking moment and like, who am I really rooting for in this moment? Mm-hmm. I think it's a teachable moment more than anything, but I think that's why it's written really well, because right. It doesn't necessarily, you know, and then he punched him in the face. Yay.
Some of my friends though are in that first episode.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
I have to go look.
Anyway, we digressed a little bit, but that happens here at OLR if you've never been here before. Let's move on and getting on to a topic that no matter where you are on the rainbow or anywhere else, I'm sure a lot of people are getting excited about this idea, right, Loki?
Yeah, well, because especially with, you know, Mario Maker 2 coming out this week, and then also the fact that we saw during E3, they kind of teased a little bit of this chamber dungeon mode that allows you to create your own dungeons and share them in Link's Awakening. So that, of course, prompted the question to E.G. Anuma, I can't pronounce names today, that, hey, so if this mode is successful, will you make Zelda Maker? And he said, you know, I can't predict the future, but if people do love this idea of arranging dungeons, I'll keep that in mind going forward. So it's not a no. So what they're saying is there's a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yes.
So, but in order to make it happen, you have to buy tons of copies of the upcoming Zelda release.
I don't know about that. I would say just like, you know, making lots of dungeons and sharing them and utilizing that feature.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it'd be cool.
You got to think. I think honestly, a lot of it also rides on how well this, you know, because next week Super Mario Maker 2 comes out, and I think a lot of people are going to be really thrilled about that. You know, if that continues to do well, I don't know if they're necessarily going to think about a Mario Maker 3, or if they might think about what other of our games will this formula kind of work on. You know,
I want to see an NES Remix Maker.
I would love that, but at the same time, I also realize that some ideas might be more complex in execution than we think. But I love Nintendo getting into this creation and creativity space.
Yeah.
Namely, like, Mario Maker is basically, I mean, you know, hello, Mario Paint was a creative game to some extent. So we can't say, like, Nintendo's never been here. But not just the fact that it is, like, you know, something creative, but it's using one of their big IPs to do it, and with the shareableness that it has. And I know the game's taken a lot of shit for not being able to play games online with your friends. Obviously, they've heard that. They're going to fix that and so forth. But I just love seeing Nintendo kind of get into that in this internet age. You know, that it's basically their own version of Little Big Planet. So I kind of want to see kind of where it goes from here.
Yeah, so I'd love to see their own version of Little Big Planet.
Yeah. Sia Tiberi in chat says, Game Theory released a video today on YouTube's effect on new gaming trends and the rise and fall of certain game franchises. Oh, sure. I mean, not just YouTube, but Twitch and all the places where you can watch, you know, gameplay footage, I think, definitely. I mean, games like Minecraft, to some extent, probably wouldn't be as big as there were as they are if it were not for YouTube and Twitch.
Yeah.
And PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds and therefore Fortnite Battle Royale.
And
I
even
don't
before
think it would
that,
not nearly be as big of a deal as it was.
No, even before that, H1Z1, there was... I'm trying to think what else.
Well, real quick, let me continue with CTBR's thoughts. I think YouTubers could help push a Zelda maker into reality if the LA dungeon maker ends up being successful there. They blamed YouTube for the failure of Mortal Kombat 11. I heard Mortal Kombat 11 was like doing phenomenally well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been, they've got more DLC coming out too. They just did the Shang Tsung release and all that. Yeah, but, it's great.
But CTBR does say because of the monetization rules, cursing, violence, etc., lead to demonetization. So maybe if you're hanging out on YouTube a lot, it feels like Mortal Kombat 11 is not as present because people don't want to make videos about it because they're going to get demonetized due to the extreme level of violence in the game. So, but in my opinion, that's
one channel I've been doing nothing but.
That's a YouTube thing, in my opinion, but we won't go there. Tiger Claw says, a Zelda maker would be interesting, but then people would design dungeons that are super hard and have very complex puzzles to pass them. Sure, but there's always going to be the hell levels, but there's going to be people that just make cute stuff too and creative stuff. Like, and I know I've said this on the show before, and I'm going to say it again. The best thing I ever saw in Little Big Planet 1 was that level that was like my shrine to Parker Posey. Yeah. And you played through the level and you would unlock, because you could take pictures with the camera and like stickers you can unlock. And so you just unlocked all these stickers of Parker Posey as you played the level. And there was like Parker Posey trivia that would come up as you played the level. And I was like, this is so ridiculous that I love it, because Parker Posey is pretty awesome, y'all. I know y'all saw Scream 3, right? Hello, Party Girl? Anybody? What, Waiting for Guffman?
I didn't see it.
Right. Anyway. All right, let's move on. Obviously, E3 just wrapped up, and one thing that was missing from E3 was Metroid Prime 4. It wasn't there, and a lot of people noticed it was missing. And what's really strange about it, in an interview with Eurogamer, they asked, I can't not ask you about a certain other project you're working on, Metroid Prime 4. We haven't seen anything of it at all this E3. Do you have an update for fans patiently waiting for it? And Kensuke Tanabe replied from Nintendo, I shouldn't say. It's a little tricky. To be completely honest, at this E3, I just want people to pay attention to Luigi. If I mention something about Metroid Prime 4, people will focus on that. But when the time comes, I'm so ready to talk about it, which led to this headline. Metroid Prime 4 was not mentioned at E3 because they wanted people to focus on Luigi's Mansion 3. I think from that quote, we just find the reality of E3 is that if they had brought Metroid Prime 4 to the show, people wouldn't be asking nearly as many questions about Luigi's Mansion 3. So I think you can kind of read between the lines in the response there and say it was a very kind of carefully chosen what we did and we didn't want to show because, you know, we wanted to control the narrative of what was being discussed, which isn't, that's what every gaming company does at E3. There's so much planning that goes into it. So, but honestly, I just kind of took it as they just said not that long ago that Metroid Prime 4 was basically rebooted, right? They did that whole direct in what, February? So I kind of just assumed it wasn't ready. I was more surprised that they didn't announce like a, and here's a Metroid Prime trilogy on Switch to hold you over. Or here's a remaster of Metroid Prime 1 where we just kind of, you know, turned up the graphics on level 3. We did a little extra polish.
We just had AI go through and high res all the textures.
We did a little bit, not a ton, but a little something to get you interested in it again. You know, because obviously we don't want them taking too many hours for Metroid Prime 4, but I think we all know that.
Just have another company do it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So, and SSG100 Matt does say, they made that announcement 6 months ago saying they were starting from scratch for Metroid Prime 4. So it's kind of nuts to expect that they have something for E3 in 6 months. And VidPower573 says, I assume Nintendo put all their focus on the big reveal of Breath of the Wild 2. Sia Tabiri says, how about the big Animal Crossing thing? Wouldn't that have overshadowed MP4 or the opposite? I kind of think there's room for both because they're such different games. But I also think that about Luigi's Mansion 3, I mean, that there's room for both games. But perhaps the excitement of something like Metroid Prime 4 may have made people only ask about that. And so I kind of get it in a way. So, but I think that game is still going to be a little ways out. I don't think we're going to see it right away. But, you know, if they rebooted it, then they clearly had a reason for doing it. So we'll see what happens. Moving on, let's get to our next story. Let's get a little political, I guess, in this next story.
Well,
but not too political.
Well, I found this actually kind of randomly, and I will say this: I'm a Bernie babe. I like Bernie. He's got really good chances, and that's all I'm going to say. But Bernie, being the lovely socialist like he is, brought up video game developers. And on top of that, he actually is encouraging them to unionize. And I will read the quote from his tweet. Sorry. The video game industry made $43 billion in revenue last year. The workers responsible for that profit deserve to collectively bargain as a part of a union. I'm glad to see unions like IATSC and the broader game workers movement organizing such workers. And he linked the Time article about the burnout, you know, going on rampant in the industry. And but the other thing too is just that he's, you know, always been talking for people to unionize, to stand up for their rights. And I think that it was actually pretty, a bit surprising, but very good to see that he's including the video game industry with that same call, especially in light of the recent, you know, the recent issues that developers have been working with, that crunch time bullshit, you know? And it's also, you know, really good. I mean, even just recently, AFL-CIO published a letter in Kotaku for calling for, you know, developers to join in with their union and everything. So Game Workers Unite, though, is a pretty good place to start looking if you are in the video game industry and want to unionize.
I think it's pretty neat that a politician has, and to be disclosed, I have not figured out, there's still so many candidates in it, and I'm also focused on the fact I just want to make sure whoever comes out of that battle royale thing is the one that beats you know who. Yeah. But
just remember, Biden called Anita Hill a liar.
You know, I'm a very strong opinion that now is not the time to cut all the people down because we don't know who's going to come out of it. So I'm going to support whoever comes out of it. But as far as it goes, I think it is really neat to see that there is somebody who is willing to kind of like call out the game industry like that because of the fact that the game industry has always kind of been something that's very underground. We always think like we kind of forget it's as big as it really is, right? Because a lot of us come from the 80s and 90s era of when games were things that nerds did. You know, it wasn't – but now the reality is like game is everything that Hollywood is and more. Mm-hmm. And certainly politicians have had their piece to say on Hollywood. So all of them. So why not be commenting on the games industry as well? So I think that's really cool that, you know – somebody's talking about it, and I'm sure more will too.
Well, I mean, and on top of that, you know, Bernie also did, you know, poke at Disney to pay their workers more after Avengers Endgame, you know, with the big ass money that make. I mean, I actually want to see the industries taxed more and see them be responsible for taking care of the people that they're making money off of. So this is even more of a, I've, you know, cemented for me my decision. So
I'll say this, and, you know, folks in chat are kind of like, you know, asking questions and stuff. If I had to vote tomorrow, I would, and not to get into a debate, but if I had to vote for tomorrow, I'd vote for Elizabeth Warren is who I'd vote for right now. But I'm not like, I'd totally reserve the right to change my mind.
That's right now. I'm in primary brain mode. I'm looking at who would best fit my ideals. Yeah. If Bernie wasn't there, it would be Warren for me. Mm-hmm. Biden would be in the toilet because he's nothing without Obama to keep him in fucking control. But at any rate, you know, right now I'm thinking in terms of primaries. I'm thinking in terms of putting my support behind the one I think is going to do the best job. Yeah. And whoever comes out of it, I'm probably still going to vote for him, even if it's Biden, because he's a big, terrible, misogynist racist.
I think he's old and foolish. I don't know if those other things are true.
Go back and watch the trial with Anita Hill.
I'm not going to get in politics. I'm just not.
But anyway, at any rate, that's why I'm focusing more, though, on primary right now. Putting my weight behind who I think is going to be the best job. And this is just another thing that, and I didn't post it because, oh, I want everyone to vote for Bernie. It's because he's really one of the
first talking about it.
People who has said something about it in the political spectrum.
And one reason why I did say what I said about Elizabeth Warren is one thing that has constantly impressed me about her, and I tie this into this, and that why you bring up this Bernie thing, and it's not like a personal preference or whatever, I get that, is because Warren has come out and said, this is my plan for this. This is my plan for that. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. And she's like laid it out. And that's one thing I really admire about her is that I feel like she's not blowing smoke up my ass, which I can't say that about necessarily everybody I've ever seen run for that office. So that's, you know, so if they feel the need to respond to this, and I'll kind of start to wrap up with this comment. If they feel the need to respond to this, I'm encouraged that maybe Warren might come out and say, yes, the game developers need to unionize, and this is what I'm going to do to Google, and this is what I'm going to do, you know, and this is what I think they should do, and so forth. I hope, you know, because she's kind of done that for me so far.
I want them on a ticket together.
I don't want to get too – I don't think they ultimately will. They're both great. Don't get me wrong.
But I would kill to see it.
Everybody would, but the point of a ticket is you have to have a little column A, a little column B. You know what I mean? So anyway – all right, moving on. Who are you voting for, Loki? No, I'm just kidding. Don't answer. Go to the next question.
I mean,
question.
I've got to back my man Trump because he's going to be up. No, fucking wait. No one's going to vote for him.
People probably watching this, there are some that might, but I just...
Then stop. Just stop.
I'm going to say, like, really listen to the complaints of the people complaining. And, like, for me, here's the thing. This administration has put the T in LGBTQ under attack consistently. And I'm going to stick up for my brothers and sisters because it's fucked up.
Yeah.
What is happening? It is
how many
beyond
trans
belief.
People of color,
oh my God,
have been murdered just in the last month and a half.
Yeah. So anyway, without, sorry, I know we've probably gone too far in the deep end so far.
You know what?
But I just,
it needs to be said.
Like, yeah, but I'm just like, you know, if you are somebody that's, you know, on that train or whatever, like all I can say to try to meet you halfway is like, just try to listen to why people are as bothered as they are. So anyway, moving on. Loki, non-political. Oh, wait, no. It's
semi-political.
Semi-political.
We'll try to make it not as political. But basically, so there was an interview with Phil Spencer talking a little bit about the Xbox platform. Because you remember during the Xbox press conference, they had mentioned a few things talking about, you know, how they want to build a safe and inclusive gaming environment for everyone. So, you know, along with that, you know, he's kind of said that basically, hey, listen, you know, to be up front, everyone says, oh, free speech, we should be allowed to do whatever. Xbox Live is not a free speech platform. It's not a place where anybody can come and say anything, and we're working to ensure it's safe and inclusive environment for everybody. I don't want to be opaque about it. I want to be out there in front and center so that you understand our motivation. So, of course, what they're going to be doing along with that is looking to identify potentials for abuse and misuse on our platform, and they're going to fix problems quickly. Said, hate and harassment have no place in gaming. And I think that's a good start, considering that the Xbox Live community for the longest time had kind of this big, you kind of put hate speech in like asshole children along with, you know, kind of it's synonymous with that platform. And it's kind of good to see them trying to move away from that because really it shouldn't. It doesn't belong in any platform, really. But people, when they hide behind anonymity, they act like complete assholes. So you can't fix the problem completely, but you can sure as hell make it hard for them.
I think it's great. Say what you will about whether this will work or not in changing their image, but I do love – Microsoft is in such a better direction now under Phil Spencer than it has been probably ever. So I'm going to give Phil Spencer major, major kudos. I'm such a fan. That being said, like, I think it's great when a company says they will do something and that they're going to – I mean, even if they're not like going to eventually be successful because, you know, you can't police every conversation out there and so forth – I think that has to start by kind of setting the stage of like, this is gaming and everybody can game, you know, and to hear that kind of at the corporate level that like that's what they support and that gaming is not some like exclusive clique in somebody's basement anymore, that we believe that everybody should be able to play games. I think that is a huge start in like setting the right tone.
Yeah.
But you know, that you like you add anonymity and people are always going to get ugly and things like that. So I'm not sure, again, how successful it's going to be. I'm kind of on the same page with SSG 100 Matt, where he says, on this XBL topic, I'll believe it when I see it. So, yeah, I kind of don't think Xbox Live is going to change overnight. That's for sure. But it is very nice for Microsoft to kind of say, like, you know, this is what we believe, and these are the actions we're going to take to try to demonstrate it. It's something. You're not – it's because the way it's going ain't working. So there's that. All right. Questbuster in chat says, everyone not on my friends list is muted. And honestly, that's how I tend to play online these days as well. But I do play MMOs and stuff where I get exposed to people with text chat. But honestly – the number of dirtbags I run into on something like Final Fantasy 14 or even WoW is like way, especially if I don't join general chat. I'll see a lot if I join general chat. But like if I play like Final Fantasy 14 in a party or something, I very rarely see shitty behavior. Sure, I do see shitty behavior, but like it's the vast minority of what I run into. And it's very easy to just drop the party, block the person, and re-queue. You know, or you may take a 30-minute penalty, but you know what? It's worth it than having to go back in the dungeon with that particular individual. Because most people just want to play the fucking game. Unfortunately, some people get on there and are really loud and ruin it for everybody else. So, all right. Anyway, let's move on, though. We got a few more stories to cover here. We're going to get to a story about Twitch, actually. Very meta. We're going to talk about Twitch on Twitch. Twitch also bought a something this week. So Niantic made a purchase, but so did Twitch. Twitch bought a company called Bebo, I think is how you pronounce it. I have never heard of Bebo, but apparently Bebo, like back in the day, was Facebook, MySpace in the UK.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, but it was never really something that caught on here.
Because I think that's where like one of the Asian chat sites derived from.
I think so. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Because I was like, Friendster was like kind of the first. A lot of people got Friendster had a very Asian audience after most people kind of left it for MySpace. So, and Google had a network. What the hell was not Plus? Not the, they had one before it. And I can't remember the name of it, but it was another one of those ones that everybody got on. And then it was huge in like Brazil. It was like a huge, God, what, Orkut? Was that the name of it? Was that a Google thing at one point? I think it was. I think it was called Orkut, something like that. So I should bring up chat because I bet somebody knows.
Just want an alternative to Facebook that isn't anyway. Shitty.
Twitch bought Bebo. Well, why would Twitch want to buy a social network? Because even though that's what Bebo used to do, what happened in July 2013, the original founders of Bebo bought it back from AOL for just $1 million, and Bebo started focusing on game streaming and esports. They even offered their own version of the OBS tool, kind of like Streamlabs does, that some Twitch streamers still actually use right now. So they found that streamer tournaments started becoming a big thing. So they actually ended up closing the general streaming stuff on Twitch, and they actually worked on their gaming events side of the business. So their focus basically is streaming gaming events, and that is what Twitch now wants to buy because, and the thought is, Twitch does a lot of esports streaming, like I think Overwatch League's probably on right now, but that's not a Twitch thing. They just air it, right? I used to watch the Heroes of the Storm stuff until Blizzard canceled it, but that was all on Twitch. Twitch would like to have their own. Twitch does have their own esports stuff, but I don't think it's very, very large and maybe as big as they want it to be. So this might be something that kind of ups their esports games, which whether that's a thing you're into or not is a big part of, I think, the future of Twitch and so forth and just streaming online in general. There's probably 100,000 people watching Overwatch League right now. You know, it's no small audience to laugh at, you know?
Yeah.
So, there you go. I just think it's interesting that Bebo has that history where like, oh, it was a social network. Then it was like a Twitch streaming thing. Now it's going to be something that Twitch owns. So, Tiger Claw in chat says Google Buzz. No, it was even before that, believe it or not. I know Buzz. No, it was before that. I think it was Orkut. I really do think that was the name of it. Like O-R-K-U-T or something like that. Let's see. Nifty805 in chat, who I notice has a TwitchCon 2019 thing on their profile. I'm still sitting on the fence with that. I'd like to go to TwitchCon. I just found out one of my closest friends is moving to San Diego, which I'm really sad about because he's one of my closest friends. But hey, I have a place to stay in San Diego. So it might happen anyway. But Nifty805 says, Alaska 5000, come to Brazil. Well, there's a lot of people in Brazil, believe it or not. And, it's like, it's funny because when we talk about games, we really end up sometimes in this bubble where the US, Canada, Japan, the UK, that blob, the UK, which everybody kind of sometimes assumes is just Britain, unless you live over there. But no, the UK is several countries, right? And that's it. Gaming doesn't exist everywhere else. But and that's why I love that, like, you know, we have callers to this show, like ACT-EFT, certainly most notably, who's like, hey, this is what it's really like in Mexico, right? And then it sometimes humbles us and reminds us, oh, yeah, there's gamers in all these different countries we don't always hear about. There's lots of gamers in Brazil. How often do we talk about video games in Brazil?
Really, almost never.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, just kind of ties into that whole thing. So, all right. Anyway. Oh, and YYR points out Overwatch League has only 62,000 viewers right now. Okay, well, I guess because it's getting later. Or they have to compete against Summer Games Done Quick right now. That's probably probably more people watching that. So, all right. Anyway. Okay, thank you, VidPower. VidPower went to Wikipedia and confirmed that Google did operate Orkut as their first social media thing. Thank you. All right. I remembered. I don't always remember. Well, now we're going to remember together, because every week Dark Soccer likes to take us down memory lane with a segment she calls the Classic Game of the Week. And she's going to step into the gaming vault and find a game that she thinks, hey, you brats, check this game out. It's 10 years older or more and is worthy of your attention. And I'm going to warn you before I get the footage up here, it's going to go blank for a minute because I screwed up some of the preload tonight. So we're going to go blank for just a minute, but Dark Soccer is going to tell us about this week's selection.
Well, I have to say why I picked it first
is,
number one, I love kind of obscure. Number two, it came out in June of 2002, which, what else happened in June of 2002?
Oh, I get it. Okay.
We let out this, you know, rabid ferret of a show.
Yes, I love it. All right, so what is it? What is the Classic Game of the Week?
Shantae. Shantae, we stay.
Shantae, we stay. Absolutely. Which still isn't loading.
Well, at any rate,
Shantae, go ahead and talk about it. I'll fix the video.
Shantae is a platforming game that was developed by WayForward and published by Capcom. It came out for the Game Boy Color in 2002, and it was the first game in the series. It did have sequels, so Shantae Risky's Revenge, Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, and Shantae Half Genie Hero. So basically, you play as a half genie named Shantae, who has to travel across Sequin Land, which, I don't know, take me to Sequin Land. And she has to foil the domination plans of a pirate named Risky Boots. Rob, I think I found my new drag name.
Risky Boots. I like that.
So she learns dances as you go along and gets items that make her get stronger and unlock new abilities in different places, and then she can go kick Risky's ass. It was pretty obscure, this first one was, because it came out a year after the Game Boy Advance was already out.
Yeah, because I was like, I don't know this first game nearly as well as I know the sequels.
Well, at any rate, it did get the very great reviews, and it's been included as one of the best games for the Game Boy Color, and even called a cult classic. So, as I said, it's a platform adventure game. You have to go across, you know, different areas, and, you know, your default attack has you using your hair like a whip. And you can also get gems from defeated enemies to purchase items like potions to restore your life and damaging things, and combat upgrades. And then you have five towns with different areas with enemies and obstacles and whatnot. And so you just go around. You have all kinds of, like, different dances that you can do that transform you into different animals, including a monkey that can climb on walls, a smashing elephant, a spider that climbs on webbing in the background, and a harpy that can fly in midair. And so you use those abilities to unlock other items. You have a day and night cycle with enemies becoming stronger at night, because what a terrible night for the curse. You can also collect fireflies that give you a reward for getting them all. You also have warp squids, which basically they let you, you give them to a mother squid, and then you can warp to a dungeon. So weird. But anyway, it's, you know, it's a land that was protected by genies, and then the genies had children with humans, and stuff happened, and the genies went away, and then we have to save the world. So anyway, it started development in 1997, There's even an archived version of WayForward's page that had a different way they were planning on taking the game, and it was in development for PC or PlayStation at the time with 3D characters over 3D backgrounds. It was really going to be a different game. But then they were going then back to the idea of doing it for the SNES, and they kept pitching the developers pitched the game to WayForward, and they basically greenlit a Game Boy Color of it, shopped around for a publisher, and Capcom was the one who took the chance on them, but they had them hold back the release of the game. And finally, though, this did give them time that when the Game Boy Advance was already out, they worked on making the game, even though it's a Game Boy Color game, look good on the Game Boy Advance. There are no public sales figures, but hearsay is about 25,000 copies of the game were produced and sold out, but there was no second run, so the game is a little bit hard to find. They basically said that creatively they made the game a little bit too mature in brand because the character was sexy or something. I don't know. She's pixels, with boobs. But basically, and also their market, data was saying that, female lead character won't sell, blah, blah, blah. But, they were just trying to reach an audience. And the game really was received very well. IGN gave them great ratings.
I just have to say really quick, this game, I would never have believed that this was a Game Boy Color game. I don't know if World Long Plays did, a video here where it's on in advance, so maybe we're seeing, the enhancements or whatever. I would have never guessed this was a Game Boy. I would have thought this was, something that was, something that had more advanced tech, that came out after Game Boy, maybe the Lynx or the Sega's thing or whatever, it looks great for Game Boy.
And basically, the only company that gave them a bad score was Game Informer.
Because
this one male reviewer said the game isn't compelling enough to keep you playing it. What, because it's a woman?
Well,
I've seen that rating a lot, though, from Game Informer people. When a game has a female protagonist.
I'd like to know more about that, but anyway, later.
But it's gone on to be considered a cult classic. It's been considered, and although funny enough, another Game Informer guy, Ben Reeves, called it the 15th best Game Boy game and felt that it was overlooked. So, okay, maybe they're better now. There were sequels. There was supposed to be Shantae Risky Revolution for Game Boy Advance, or Shantae Risky Waters for the Nintendo DS. We had Shantae's Risky Revenge in 2009, and it was available for DSiWare. And they were going to do it as an episodic, and so instead, though, they did it as a standalone sequel. It was ported to iOS, Windows, and PlayStation 4. The third one was Shantae and the Pirate's Curse that came out on the 3DS eShop. And then it also came out on Wii U, Windows, PS4, Xbox One, and Amazon Fire. And then the last one that was out was Shantae Half Genie Hero that came out for on Windows, PlayStation 4, Vita, Wii U, which I have the Wii U one, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. And it is also the first HD game in the series. It was done via crowdfunding on Kickstarter and PayPal, which doubled its original goal and went to about $950,000. And a fifth game is in the works, supposed to be released this year. I don't know any more about it. It doesn't have a name. But it's for PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and Apple Arcade. So, also, Shantae was re-released for Nintendo 3DS Virtual Console, and it apparently is still available on eShop. So, you have a chance to play it.
Is that it?
Shantae, we stay.
All right, Shantae, you stay. It's the classic game of the week. A game as old as this show. I can't believe it. Shantae.
Slightly older, yeah.
Slightly older. Oh, I was like, did the video actually finish? All right. Good pick. Because, again, I only know the subsequent sequels. I don't know a lot about the original, so very cool.
Yeah, it's a good little game.
I had the Wii U and the 3DS versions from that Humble Bundle that they did a while back.
YYR in chat says, I just checked, and the current going price for authentic copies of this game on eBay average around $400. You can get reproductions for cheap, though. That's that's a crazy expensive game, that's for sure. All right.
I think we might have one.
Wow.
I'll have to look. I mean, I've been trying. I'm considering actually selling some of our pricier games if someone wants to make an offer.
Well, you got to. They got to know what there is.
Mighty Final Fight, Final Fight Guy.
You've been trying to get rid of those for a while.
Ninja Gaiden Trilogy. Well, we didn't try to. I just had them sort of on the think about it list.
Yeah.
Ninja Gaiden Trilogy. Mm-hmm. Secret of Evermore.
Is that considered rare? I think I have a card of that somewhere.
Maybe.
Oh, wow, I should find it.
Just, we have a few things, so just ask.
All right.
But Dracula X isn't for sale.
All right. Well, a little different tonight, but we don't have an in-studio break or with a prior rendered video or anything like that because the project I wanted to do, I wasn't able to get done. So we're just going to go right into the next segment of our show and tackle some rapid-fire news. Loki.
Yeah, so there's some pretty cool stuff. So there's a brand new mod for StarCraft remastered that transforms the game's look to look a little bit more like something you would see, kind of like Castle Crashers or something like that. So it's Carbot Animations. They had a StarCraft series that he did, and it's basically the animations from that with all the graphics redone in the game to look like his animated series. And it's awesome. It's actually kind of officially blessed by Blizzard as well. They even unveiled it during like this Korean event, but you can check it out. It looks pretty cool. It looks like a completely different game.
That's very, very cool. I like the idea of like reskinning the game. I wish Blizzard would kind of open it up to more stuff like that. But I guess you can do a lot with the StarCraft II arcade mode, but I know this is the original, but you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still the remastered, so they probably added some more of those features in there as well.
True.
All right. And then, so this is something I think Jamie would be interested in, but apparently now they have a mod in Mass Effect 2 that you can play in first person.
No, thank you.
So, yes, yeah, so it's a brand new PC mod that you can play in first person. You can't play the whole game, apparently, like that. It says the combat isn't working properly due to clipping issues, but everything else from walking around talking to people is in first person.
I think the only thing that I would want to do, are the cinematic scenes in that mode?
It says most of the, yeah, everything else is in it.
Okay, well,
know.
Then I have to seduce Garrus in first person, but other than that, I would get so motion sick.
And apparently he's working on mods right now for Mass Effect 1 and 3 as well.
Nice.
So that's it.
All right, well, let's move on to a topic I've already kind of brought up earlier in the show, but just so we all are clear, Summer Games Done Quick 2019 is underway.
I'm very excited about this, yes.
And I'm sure there's people that are not watching our show tonight to go watch that, which, you know, it's hard to be mad at a charity thon. What game are they on right now? The schedule says they would be on Devil... The schedule says they'd be on Devil May Cry, but I'm not sure if that's on East Coast time. Oh, no, it says it's converted to my local time. So they should be on about Devil May Cry right now. Maybe just wrapping that up and getting ready to start Streets of Rage here in a couple minutes. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, Summer Games Done Quick is going on, and I'm sure many of you guys will be watching. Tonight I will throw the host after OLR to Summer Games Done Quick, although I'm sure, you know, I love to support the indie streamers as well, and that's tends to be where we throw the host after OLR. But tonight, you know, I know a lot of you guys are into that, so we'll throw it over there.
And I always love, you know, Taskbot, or the Taskbot block and bad block, of course, bad game block. So I have to see when those are, because those are usually what I want to watch.
Oh, and Bobby says he's auditioning to do the hosting next year, do some of the voiceovers. I know he was looking into doing that. And actually, Jason, our voiceover guy, is there right now. He's not doing hosting there, but he's volunteering, I guess, to learn more about the whole thing. And he's actually there.
Cool.
At Summer Games Done Quick. I doubt you'll see him on the camera because, you know, there's a lot going on at that hotel. But I was like, Jason, get some footage of all the other stuff at Summer Games Done Quick so we can kind of show some of that on OLR. So hopefully he has the time to put that together. But I know volunteering is his first focus. And we appreciate that he even had time to do an intro tonight, really. So, all right. And Bobby says silly games are what they call them now.
Silly games.
Silly games. Ah, oh, silly games. All right. One other quick story here from me, and that has to do with everybody was losing their bananas last week when they heard that Ubisoft was putting a new game out on the Wii. Just Dance 2020 is coming out of the Wii. That's not changing. But in an interview with The Telegraph over in the UK, Alan Corr, I hope I said his name right, said, "I think we're the last soldier standing when it came to the Wii. We are the last game on the Wii, and we are happy about that, as there are still a lot of fans wanting to play on it. Now we see they are going to the Switch, and at the end of the year, Just Dance 2020 will be one of the best games on the Switch because there are more and more families playing on it as it was in the Wii times." But it was apparently also brought up at some point that this will be the last. That's it. This is the last game on the Wii. No more after this. So
I mean, they wouldn't put it on the Wii if it wasn't selling because, you know, it costs money to produce those. You know, they have to make a version of the game for the Wii, and they have to publish it. They have to make copies of it. So if it wasn't worth, if it wasn't selling, they wouldn't be putting it on that system. So obviously it's selling. It's just they may see the drop in sales this year because there are more people converting to the Switch, and that's just going to be where their focus is going to be for the Nintendo platforms.
And, you know, to be fair, there'll always be indie stuff continuing to come out on the Wii because there's always going to be like a cult, if you will. I'm using that term loosely, to that'll develop games for consoles that have been sunsetted a long time. Hello, like Halo 2600. People still develop for the Atari 2600. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's going to be people that still develop for the Wii, but this will be the last commercial release, certainly probably for the Wii. Unless I say probably because I guess you never know what'll happen, but most likely. All right. Anyhow, and VidPower says shout outs to the Wii U, the best way to play Wii games. And I said that last week is that I don't know if it's a Wii release as much as it is. Oh, it's a Wii U release as well. But yeah, I think the executive is right in the comment there that most people at this point are converting to the Switch if they haven't already. You might have some people that are holding off on those rumors about a souped up Switch or a Switch Mini. We don't have that on our show world tonight, but I realize there's a lot of rumors from like not hardware makers, peripheral accessories, makers of accessories, that apparently there is a Switch Mini thing that's leaking, but we'll wait and see what comes of that. We'll wait and see what Nintendo has to say about that. All right, Dark Sakura, I know you have a couple quick things for us.
I do. It's actually having to do with the Breath of the Wild sequel. Aonuma Eiji basically had said in an interview that they wanted to do a more DLC for Breath of the Wild and had so many different ideas and so many changes that they were like, nope, DLC ain't going to cut it. We need to make this a sequel. And so because they had so many ideas for DLC, they just thought this would just work good as its own game. And so I'm pretty excited about that. And I still very much would hope we get to play a Zelda. I mean, there's hints there. But anyway, moving on from that, of course, and Bobby already talked about this, but Tesla Arcade is a thing where you can play video games in your Tesla. You can also use the steering wheel, which is moving your tires. And Bobby said they're expensive. Expensive tires, which we know about from Dan's Mustang as well because they're special tires. But you can play with the wheel in your car to play the game. And you know, you can brake with the brake pedal on your car. You can't accelerate because it's already accelerating. It's on this one game, Beach Buggy Racing 2. But yeah, you can use your car.
We've all seen those videos of cars like crashing into stores or whatever. We've all seen those videos, and nobody wants that to be them in their Tesla. So that's why they don't let you use the gas pedal.
But there you go. Yeah. Drive virtual car with real car.
I will say Bobby went in a little in depth on his show on this topic if you want to hear more, because I thought he made a very good point about how you, with the turning of the wheel and the tires, you probably don't want to do a lot of that while you're parked. So this is really a novelty, like show off thing, but this is not the way you're going to game long term. This is just to
put your car
show
on the
off.
Lift first. And then do it.
Yeah, put a car up on a lift first and then do it. But you know what? So is that. I remember, and Bobby showed me this when I was visiting last, the way that they do like Rainbow Road and so forth and there. And it's one of those things, oh, it's cute. You show it off to your friends. Ha ha, that's funny. And then you don't really ever do it again. So yeah. Anyway. Bobby says, I can play other games in my Tesla, but not the new high-end stuff. I have some of the Atari games on mine, like Asteroids and Centipede. Yeah, that's pretty cool that they have the but it's interesting how Tesla wants to do all this gaming stuff. It's like, I don't – okay, for something that's supposed to be an aw, that's cute moment, it's like, all right, this is – how long is this going to go? But maybe – I don't know. Maybe they it is – I don't know about the turning the wheel in place, but like, you know, if you can play with the touchpad, play classics and stuff, it is something to do while the car is charging because, you know, that may be something that you're not used to is waiting for the car to charge, which might take a little longer than fueling up. But that's why they put those car chargers at shopping malls and, you know, elaborate travel stops and places where it's very easy to kill a lot of time. So anyway. All right. We'll move on. Let's talk about world release dates. Travel around the world and check out what is coming out in a store near you. Loki.
All right. So this week we've got... Looks like Heavy Rain coming out on PC. Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, the Switch version, is going to be coming out as well. Devil May Cry on Nintendo Switch. Judgment on PlayStation 4. Samurai Showdown on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Super Neptunia RPG on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4. MotoGP 19 on Nintendo Switch. The Sinking City on PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One. F1 2019 on PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One. And last but not least, Super Mario Maker 2 on the Switch.
Awesome.
Yep.
Excited about that, that's for sure.
I can't wait to get that.
All right. Moving on and talking about what's coming out in Japan. On Japan, we have Samurai Showdown is released on June 27th on the PlayStation 4. A game called Kono Subarashi Sekai ni Suyukufuku.
This wonderful world something.
Is coming out. And then Dark Tetsuya, La Mulana 2 gets its Japanese release this week. So I'm sure, I think that's already out here. Or on like on the Switch or something. And then that same Kono Subarashi game is coming out in a regular and limited edition. Also a game called To All of Mankind. I don't know if that sounds like a letter somebody writes before they do something terrible. But it actually looks like it's based on anime. Like the game called To All of Mankind is a bunch of like anime girls walking down, like they're walking across a crosswalk like they're the Beatles. So I don't, all right. That's that game. Then looking at the Nintendo Switch this week, what do we have? Puyo Puyo Esports. That's a thing? Competitive Puyo Puyo? Yeah, Puyo Puyo Esports. Only $20.
Wow.
It looks like it might be a sports-themed Puyo Puyo game. That's what I'm getting from the screenshots, but that's kind of cool. All right, other games coming out on the Switch in Japan this week. No, that's it. Sorry. Oh, no, I looked the wrong way. La Mulana 2 is on the Switch this week as well. And To All of Mankind also gets its release in Japan, as well as Bloodstained on the Switch in Japan this week. How about the UK, Dark Sakura?
There's some stuff. So we have Samurai Showdown on the 24th. Also on the 24th, Car Mechanic Simulator, Monster Jam Steel Titans. We have Kingdom Come Deliverance Royal Collector's Edition, Judgment, F1 2019 Legends Edition. On the 26th, we have The Sinking City, MotoGP 19. On the 27th, Death's Gambit, Super Mario Maker 2, QVR, QUI, QVR, maybe? Hollow Knight, F1 2019 Anniversary Edition. It.
Awesome. All right.
Should I go up through July? Because we won't be here, will we?
Well, no, you won't be here next week.
Okay.
I think we are having a show next week. It'll probably be a short show.
Aye.
Because I'll be coming back from Reno that morning. So my birthday is next week. And as a present to myself, I bought some time ago VIP tickets, meaning I get to meet and greet. And I'm so excited I could cry. Carly Rae Jepsen, or as we call her, as my people call her, Carly Slay Jesipson, is playing at the Grand Sierra in Reno. And so we have meet and greet tickets, and I'm so excited. I'm like, I'm going to cry. It's going to be so much fun. So, Loki, you look like you're about to make fun of me in a massive way. I don't even care.
I can't make fun of you because I have no idea what any of that you just said
was. Do you remember that song, Call Me Maybe? That was her.
Oh, yeah.
But if you all were to stream emotion... which you absolutely should do, as well as her new album. You should stream all the Carly Rae Jepsen. She's got a lot of great bops. That's what the kids say. A lot of bops. So
don't use anything that the kids would say anymore.
No one says that, Rob.
I will be coming back from seeing Carly slay the night before. So, and it's
I'm
my
judging you
myself.
So hard right now.
I don't give a fuck.
It would be like if you were going to see Britney, I would be.
What is wrong with Carly Rae Jepsen?
Nothing's
There's
wrong
nothing
with her,
wrong with
but
that.
She's not Britney.
Anyway,
she is not Britney.
Thank you, VidPower, who says I attended a Carly Rae Jepsen concert once. She's great. Thank you. All right.
She's not Britney.
Let's move on. Our mailbag. Every week you guys send us emails to participate at orangeloungeradio.com.
Is she iCarly?
Bobby Blackwell. She is not iCarly.
I found iCarly toys at the thrift store and I cried.
Bobby Blackwell says she's Carly, bitch. I did not expect Bobby Blackwolf of all people to make that joke. All right.
Well played.
All right, GGPO. All right, moving on. Let's get to the mailbag. Every week you guys send us emails, participate at orangelaungeradio.com, and we read them. Except sometimes your host, in his advancing age and Dark Soccer not being here, misses one. And I think that's what happened with this email.
Advanced age my ass.
Dark Soccer is about to read.
I've done been there. So, and this is from YYR. So, yes, we did get the email. It's just someone wasn't here and someone farted and someone.
Like, I literally don't have a reason. Like, I just.
Rob is a shrug emoji.
Obviously, I would not ignore or overlook his email. No. I just.
Rob is shrug emoji right
now.
Didn't
do it, yeah.
Shrug emoji. So, hello, LR. Just a couple of thoughts on last week's pre-E3 and E3 coverage. On the subject of Forza Horizon's 4-second expansion announcement, Rob remarked that the LEGO Speed expansion very well could have been made into its own game, and that he felt the same about Forza Horizon's 3 Hot Wheels expansion. But there's an important distinction to be made here for a full game and a DLC expansion. If these had been full games, and you're a Game Pass subscriber, you'd be able to play them for no additional cost. But because these are DLC expansions, they cost money to play, and you don't get them for, quote, free. And on top of this, if you decide to buy the DLC and let your Game Pass subscription expire, you may wind up owning DLC you can't use unless you turn around and buy the game. So I think these are deliberate, thought-out moves, and that they know exactly what they're doing by making these DLC and not full games. It's a truly modern business model that seems extremely user-friendly, but under the surface is just a wee bit devious.
I still want a full game. I don't care.
Yeah, no, I definitely think there's some truth to what YYR is saying, especially in the regards to they like to give you these games with the game passes because then they can still make a buck off DLC. Sometimes they include the DLC in the pack. Most time
they still sell the games because with that argument, then it's like, well, Xbox is just not publishing any more games because they're just going to include them all in Games Pass.
They still sell the games because people don't always get the Game Pass hasn't taken over yet. So, yeah.
So, I mean, full game, please.
Okay, but it's just like we just want to see this idea like as a full game. But to be fair, Bobby played the DLC. I haven't yet. And when I was listening to his show, he said, I kind of get why it's not its own game. But that doesn't mean we don't want to see the idea of a Lego Forza thing thought as like realized as
a
game.
Bigger. Obviously, yes, it's not going to be a full-fledged game in the DLC, but I would like a full-fledged game in the DLC.
Bobby says it is definitely DLC and not a full-fledged game. It's just Forza Horizon 4 with a Lego skin. So
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I know.
I'm completely fine with that.
I know. I'm kind of thinking it's
fine with also the Hot Wheels expansion as its own game.
Anyway, I'll get to it at this point, but moving on.
So now as far as Google Stadia, my question is, who is it for? What is their intended audience? If you look at the launch lineup, it contains very few exclusives. Good use of a semicolon there. I love reading YYR's letters. They're beautiful. Most of the announced games are either previously released AAA titles spanning the last few years or new AAA titles that are also releasing on established platforms. In this way, the Stadia launch lineup looks suspiciously familiar to that of Wii U. The timing of Stadia is questionable also. Completely ignoring the technology, let's get this fact straight. Stadia is launching with games that can be played on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. If you want to play a AAA console game, Now, if you want to play AAA console games, you probably own one or both of these by now. After all, you've had it, you've had almost 6 years to buy them. So who exactly is rushing to throw money at Stadia? The timing seems even more questionable when you consider this. Microsoft and Sony are launching their new consoles next year to audiences that have built up financial investments and brand loyalty over many years with exclusive games that will never launch on Stadia. So yeah, without even considering potential technical issues or Google's track record regarding the life of their services, I'm really confused as to who the intended audience of Stadia is. I just know that I'm not a part of it. Thanks again for the show and have a great week. Warm, moist hugs. Aaron YYR. Moist.
How do you feel about that word?
I don't care. But we have a friend who hates it.
I know some people are not fans of that, but anyway. All right. Well,
I have other words that I don't like.
Such as?
I hate being called hun.
Oh.
Hate it. Like, with an unholy passion. I'm like, just finish the word. Oh, honey. Right.
All right. But anyway, Bobby in chat responds to that saying, the intended audience are people who don't want to buy a high-end PC. People who don't want to buy a console, since this runs on phones and Chromebooks. And then YYR kind of follows that up saying, at Bobby. But if you don't want to buy a console, it's probably because you don't want to buy console games. Bobby replies saying, I know many people who would love to play console games who don't want to spend money on a console and plug it into their TV. I think you're kind of both right. Here's why. Bobby says it's for people who don't want to buy that stuff. And yes, that's what Stadia is trying to do. It's consoles as a service. It's trying to take the console, and I'm including high-end PC as a console here, and it's trying to like basically instead sell that essentially as a service. Although we know the low end of it will be free, but it is still a service, right? But then YYR said flat out in his email, I just know it's not for me. And I think that can also be true. And so, I'm still of the mindset that, you know, and certainly I also recognize, well, Google Stadia definitely isn't for me because I do buy the high-end PCs and the consoles and stuff like that. But, you know, maybe there are people who would buy them on being able to stream something like Assassin's Creed to their phone. I just don't think a phone is a fun way to play Assassin's Creed. What? But we know that you know, Apple just made a big to-do and you probably already do this on Android about using Bluetooth controllers on their devices. So,
yeah,
you know.
I was thinking, you know, maybe like, you know, the draw is like smart TV owners. I mean, because I know with our TV that we got last year, you know, there's a lot of different apps that are built in and stuff. So you could do like, you know, Hulu and Netflix and that kind of stuff. And this is like another, oh, hey, I can play games on this too. The only thing with that, though, is with Stadia, you've got to have either a Bluetooth game controller or their preferred, you know, Stadia controller, which is like $100. It's less than $100, but it's still expensive. You know, it's not just like I can play it out of the box type of thing. So I don't know. I don't know who it's for. And I think really with the bandwidth caps that are in place now with most internet services, it is going to be a hard sell for that because it's like, well, why do I need to do this? Maybe later on when, like, technology gets even better and, you know, they're able to stream games with better quality graphics and stuff like that, there might be more of a value proposition there. But right now, yeah, I don't know who it's for.
I think there might be something to say about people in other countries that may not have the easy access to consoles. I know we talked about Brazil earlier randomly.
But ironically.
But of course, now, before you say it, Brazil's going to have the internet infrastructure to support it, but I imagine some of their larger cities do. But I'm just saying there might be places where it's not so easy to just get these consoles and higher parts because of import taxes and all this other stuff. So Stadia might actually be a more cost-effective option.
I get
if
that.
If they have the internet.
But they're not even launching in those countries. So that's the other thing is it's not being launched there.
Yet.
Yet. I understand that. But I don't know. I think there's just other ways that would be better, like PC gaming or...
I just think, although, yes, it's certainly for a casual audience, I think the reality is the bandwidth issues and concerns that come with that are going to really, like, once a casual kind of hears about how much of their internet's going to get eaten with it and that if they just play Stadia a lot, they can't really use Netflix or anything, I think they'll kind of be turned off to it.
Yeah, I think once we see – we're going to have to see, like, what the actual numbers are as far as, like, how much data it's using in a given month, you know. And I'm sure those articles are going to come out, like, once the service is launched or, like, you know, issues with running that while you're doing, you know, streaming on another thing, or what if I want to play Stadia and someone else in my family wants to play Stadia at the same time? Then it's like, oh, can't do that.
Here's and YYR is saying in chat, like, I'm trying to follow the logic where someone might say this product is for me and I'm just not seeing it. Let me give you one other example I could think of, because I know I would have used it in this circumstance. If I was a college kid who couldn't afford to get my own console because I'm trying to put myself through school, but I still want to be able to play video games on a Saturday night, and I'm going to use my school internet, and I would too, to play maybe the free version of Stadia and maybe have a couple games on it, or, you know, some of the free-to-play stuff. Maybe. I know I'm reaching a little.
Okay,
I'm reaching,
right.
But I think the audience will show itself.
Let's go with that. Okay, so I'm an average college kid. I'm probably going to have a computer because I'm going to college. Granted, it's not going to be the most powerful computer out there, but it's something that should be able to play, you would say, most of the esports style. So there's your Fortnites, there's your, you know, I don't know if they would play PUBG or whatever, but at least Fortnite, probably Overwatch. You throw some Minecraft in there, stuff. So you're still able to play some games and some basic games, maybe even on lower settings or whatever. If you really want a console game, I mean, yeah, probably have a console. Or if you don't have a console, you could get like a last-gen console for very cheap and get the games for even cheaper. There's lots of options out there. And also, if you're in college, you probably don't have a lot of time to be doing gaming and stuff. But I just don't know where, like, college internet would not handle that crap at all. I'm sorry. That's just not going to be a viable option. But there's still lots of things out there. And I get it that I think Google's thinking, well, hey, we can sell our Chromebooks. And even though the specs on them kind of suck for everything other than just basic internet browsing, you can kind of game on them with this. But it's kind of solving a problem that doesn't really need to be solved with a Chromebook, because people that buy Chromebooks aren't buying them to game on anyways. And no one's going to look at that and like go, oh, now I can game on. I'm totally but no, that's not going to happen. So I don't know. I don't know who it's for, and that's not really my problem to solve, and it doesn't affect me in any way. So who cares?
All right. We'll see. I still think some of this, like the bandwidth and stuff, is just going to really be the killer issue. But we'll see as this develops. Was there anything else to the email, Dark Sakura?
No, that was it.
All right. Well, thank you, YYR. And sorry it took us a week to get there. All right. So let's invite more emails next time. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. I promise I'll do better and not try to overlook them next time. All right. Meanwhile, we have just a few more stories before we open up the Skype line for some calls. We're running longer than I would have thought, especially not taking a break tonight. So it'll be short, the time for calls tonight, if you want to get in. So be sure to be there in the green room. Loki.
So there was this game that was made out there, a fan game called Mario Royale, which was basically a 75-person death race through like Mario's first few levels. So you start off and everybody's kind of racing towards the finish, and the first three that gets there wins. It's kind of neat the way you can actually see all the different Marios jumping around. Kind of reminded me a little bit of some of the other games that they have there. I think there was like God, I can't remember the racing game now. But there's several games out there that have like that kind of feature. Of course, it got taken down or cease and desist by Nintendo. Now it's under the it's under a different moniker now, and they've made it very generic as far as the graphics and stuff go. But same type of gameplay. It's a neat idea. This is something I could see him doing almost with, like, you know, the whole Nintendo Online stuff. You know, kind of a race type game or something like that. I could see them definitely adapting something like that. But right now, I mean, come on, you knew this shit was gonna get taken down, but I guess we'll just have to
Well, it's already on the internet though, so.
Well, no, it's already on the internet, but it had to be taken down. So now but it's something else.
Somebody else will have it up in moments, I'm sure. Anyway.
But neat. I mean, I don't know. I didn't get to play it when it was Mario.
But people are watching it on YouTube and stuff, or people have it on YouTube and stuff, right? So you can kind of see it in action.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at least you can watch it and you can dream of what might have been, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, it looked like a neat idea, and I still wish they would like do something like that with Nintendo and Online, because they've got, you know, what, one game that they put out on it, and they're
maybe that's why they shut it down, is that Mario.
No, I think it's because it was just infringing on their IP.
Yeah, probably.
Not because it's like, oh, you took our idea, damn it. No, I think it's their IP. Yeah, so they've got, you know, the version now. Yeah, without the Nintendo sprites in there. And I want to say that I don't know if the levels are still the same, but it looks very generic now. But, I mean, I don't know. It's neat. It's almost like that other game. Remember they had the, I don't remember what it was called now, but it was the other Mario game where you could play as the non-Mario characters as well. Like they had Metroid, or the, like Metroid characters. They had Legend of Zelda stuff. There was Blaster Master in there. I don't remember the hell that game was called, but it was...
And it was done here by a guy in SAC, too, because they went to Kickstarter with it, didn't they?
Yes, he went to Kickstarter for a generic version of it.
It's like
or
Super Mario Crossover. Thank
you,
Chatters.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Never got finished, unfortunately.
But yeah, then on the Kickstarter, it was like, all the Marios and that were gone and replaced with just... You know, analogies.
Lookalikes.
Yeah, lookalikes, basically analogies and
stuff. B-movie knockoffs.
Oh, SG 100 Masters, the Kickstarter failed.
Yeah.
So that's too bad. It's hard on Kickstarter now, you guys, because there's been so many horror stories about people not getting their goods and stuff, is that people really choose what they are and aren't going to back very carefully.
As they should be.
Yeah. I mean, I did that Antstream thing recently, but that's because, like, they were already showing basically a finished product, and they already said, we have these licenses, and this money is, you know, to kind of get us that push to, you know, get out the door running, basically, and... You know, probably to sell some early subscriptions and stuff, but that was why I backed it, was because they were pretty much already showing something that was finished. You know,
that's the only way I would ever do a Kickstarter like that.
Yeah, yeah, and I think
have a finished product in mind, and
exactly, I think things that do things like that have a better chance of succeeding than like I have an idea. Well, idea. I mean, it's great that Bloodstained is doing so well, and especially, you know, Darkstalkers receiving it as well as she is, and hopefully I do too, because like I kickstarted that thing like 4 years ago, you know.
It's yeah,
like,
that's the
a
other
long
thing.
Investment. But I am at the end of the day, I'm happy that we get a game like it and that it seems to have been worth the wait. So, all right, anyway, let me get to this story, which is about Anthem. That's right. EA, you know, some people would wonder why they haven't pulled the servers by now on Anthem, because usually that – I'm not saying that to, like, knock on Anthem, but that's just the EA thing to do, it seems, usually. But EA did a big interview with Game Daily. Andrew Wilson, the CEO of EA, basically said that bringing two subsets of players to the game was an issue. We brought together these two groups of players who were making this emotional value calculation on two different vectors. One was traditional BioWare story-driven content, and the other was this action-adventure type content. About the 30 or 40-hour mark, they really had to come together and start working in on the Elder game. At that point, everyone kind of went, oh, hang a minute. Now the calculation is off. It's off because I've got a friend who sits in this other category of player. They want to play the game a certain way. I want to play the game a certain way. The promise was we can play together, and that's not working very well. So he just kind of goes on to say that these two didn't mix or whatever, but he says the world is compelling enough to continue investing in the game, basically. Quote, the teams at BioWare will continue to come to work every day and listen to the players, old and new, and seek to deliver on the promises they've made to those players. That's what you're seeing with Anthem today. Here's the thing. A game can turn around. Diablo 3, excellent example. Final Fantasy 14, wonderful example. No Man's Sky, fantastic recent example. Anthem can be those things, and I would love it if Anthem ends up one of those things. Like, prove me fucking wrong. Make this game great, right? I just don't fucking trust EA to do it. But if there has been some epiphany at a higher level in a boardroom at EA somewhere where somebody has decided to champion, Anthem is going to be our Diablo 3.
There's a little problem, though, so far with the way that they've approached that, because they have this roadmap of, like, here's how we're going to fix the game. Here's how we're going to put out more content for it. And they have missed that roadmap, like, completely so far. And I think even now they've removed the roadmap, or the roadmap portions of the roadmap are missing now because of that. So it's not off to a good start, and trust in EA, of course, is at an all-time low. So I'm hesitant to believe just because this game and this game and this game could do it, that this game's going to do it.
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
I'm trying to give like a shred of the benefit of the doubt, but the realist to me, I think you're right, you know, and it's a bummer, but at the same time, like, EA's just made a lot of like bad decisions.
And I just hope that BioWare doesn't have to pay for that. You know,
I really hope that's true too. But I think Dragon Age 4 is going to be the make or break thing for BioWare. And so I do hope it's I hope it's great. And sir, I want to see BioWare succeed. I love BioWare. They fucking made Mass Effect. It's a great game. And I wish they could have had another year on Mass Effect Andromeda. I really do. But
I mean, in a perfect world, they would go back and actually finish Mass Effect Andromeda.
And that's where a lot of these problems come from.
That is why Anthem was never going to get any attention from me.
Yep. Same. All right. So yeah, EA, I think, in my opinion, needs to show a little bit more of the, you know, we're viewing these things differently and we're going to make these changes, but I'm not holding my breath. We'll see though. In the meantime, how about something a little bit more of a developer who was with the big time and then ended up doing something a little more indie?
Well, Igarashi-san, who I loved meeting him. He's such a rock star. But anyway, he was asked about, you know, if there was going to be more Bloodstained. And so I'm going to read this quote. And this was before the game actually came out. Since we're still in kind of in development, I haven't thought about it that much. But if Bloodstained does well, I'd be very happy, very willing to make a franchise and build upon it. Right now, it's about getting the game out, though. So, yeah, he said he would be happy and willing to give us more Bloodstained. To make it a thing. To make it its new Castlevania.
I can't believe you're already waiting for a sequel and some of us haven't played it yet. Hopefully they're able to take some of the things they've developed and some of those and really like put that into a new, you know, game. That would be great.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I think so.
Yeah. I agree. All right. Loki, just a few more stories, and then we're going to look to our Discord for some calls. VogNetwork.com/Discord will get you into the Discord, and you can go into the green room, and it's great to have a little description of what you want to talk about in Channel Orange Lounge Radio. Loki.
So it's been a while since Grand Theft Auto 5 came out, but they're still making updates to Grand Theft Auto Online. So the newest update is going to be this casino that they're adding. So the casino has actually been there for a long time. It's been in the game since the beginning. And it's just been kind of under construction the entire time. And the thought was that it was going to be this single-player DLC that never ended up coming out because they kind of shifted away from the single-player stuff and into online. In fact, I know that for a while they were actually seeing stuff about the casino even in development as all these different updates came, people data mining stuff. But now they're finally going to release the full casino is going to be coming out later this summer. As they've teased a little bit on Rockstar Games Twitter talking about this brand new casino. It says a luxury casino at the heart of Vinewood opening soon. So yes, this is another game that's getting actual gambling mechanics now. It's not beat around the bush anymore. It's actual slot machines and gambling. I haven't played Grand Theft Auto Online in so long. Which is weird because I love Grand Theft Auto and I have it on multiple platforms, but I have not played it in ages. Just such a grind fest.
Isn't it nice though to see the game get the support? Like,
I just wish it was single player DLC. I couldn't care less about the stupid online stuff.
You caught that one very well.
I know.
All right.
I try not to.
One more story for you guys before we check out our Discord, and that has to do with Cadence of Hyrule. And I thought this was an appropriate note to end on tonight, with our plug stories. Cadence of Hyrule, of course, came out on the Switch recently. I still need to play it. It's like on my list of things to play. But this is really cool. If you have a GameCube controller adapter for the Switch and you have your DDR Mario Mix dance mat, yep, you can play Cadence of Hyrule on a dance mat. The menus are not going to be the best, but you can do it. And it should be noted that Crypt of the Necro Dancer, which obviously was kind of the predecessor for Cadence of Hyrule and where that came from, has like a dance pad mode on Steam, which is really cool. So, yeah, those of you that want to play DDR cross Cadence of Hyrule, you can do that now if you have all the right equipment, which is a pretty big if. I mean, I don't know how many people still have those DDR Mario Mix dance pads, but that's still pretty cool. So. All right. Well, that's it for the stories that we had slated to talk about tonight.
Just have to throw it in my arcade cabinet at home and wire it up to my...
Yeah, right? You need to do that. Darkstalker, if you need to head out, let me know.
Just yeah.
Head out whenever.
Because food.
Okay.
The place closes at 9, so I'm going to go ahead and say goodnight to everybody. And so long and thanks for all the fish.
Thank you for 17 years, Dark Sakura.
Well, there'll be 17 more. I'll be decrepit and broken.
I'll be doing this in the old folks' home. I know there's a part of me that wants to ask the question, how much longer do you think we'll be doing this? But I think that's kind of a morbid thing to ask. And honestly, I think if you'd asked us I think I joked about this when we hit 777. I'm almost positive I said early on in the first 100 episodes, we're not going to still be doing this at episode 777. Give me a break.
I actually want to contact the Guinness office and see if we can actually get a Guinness World Record.
You get on that.
No, I'm serious about it.
Yeah. Why not?
Sure, they'll give Guinness World Records for everything.
If it's not us, at least we'll know, right?
But for longest running video game live broadcast.
Yeah, 17. I can't imagine somebody's got that. Who could? So we'll see.
We outlasted GamePro TV.
Yeah.
We've been here longer than Nick Arcade.
All right, we're going to get to some calls. All right. Thank you, Dark Sakura, for being here.
Oh, sure.
We'll see you in 2 weeks because you're not here next week, right?
Yeah, next week is San Francisco Pride. But hey.
Happy Pride.
If you're in San Francisco for Pride, come find the sisters and come find me.
That'll be fun. That's going to be a lot of people, but that'll be fun. Don't overheat. Hopefully the weather's nice. Okay. All right. Moving on. Let's get to some calls. We're going to get right to it. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
It's Brad.
Hello, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. If you can hear me, say hello.
Hello.
He's very quiet.
Hello, you're there, but you're very quiet on my end, but that might just be on my end. Go ahead, sir. Who is this?
It's Brad from Pod Culture.
Hello, Brad from Pod Culture. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, not a whole lot other than picked up a boy.
I'm sorry. Could you say that again? Because it was cutting out a little bit while Jamie was packing up stuff and my TV volume was taking a minute to turn up.
I picked up a cheap toy at Best Buy today. Some folks.
You know what, buddy? It's cutting in and out, so I might have to go ahead and I can't hear you guys. I don't know if you can, but
picking up a squeaky toy.
Yeah, I'm going to try somebody else and see if it works or if it's on our end. But type it in chat, and I'll try to relay it. Okay, sorry, buddy. All right, let's try to go to the next call. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hello, this is SJ Winter Matt.
Okay,
can you guys hear me?
Yes, you're coming through great. It was, in fact, you're probably echoing back through because I have you so loud now. Okay, sorry, buddy, what's on your mind?
I wanted to call in and talk about this whole EA loot box thing that they were
talking about. Go for it, sir.
So I'm a big sports gamer. I play a lot of the NHL games. And
right.
I think like EA is just really, they really just want to die on this hill with the loot box stuff.
They want to die on the loot box hill. Elaborate on that, please. Why do they want to die on the loot box hill?
Because these loot boxes that they use, and I would say like in the sports games that they have for like FIFA primarily, brings in so much revenue. They bring in like far more revenue than the game has, like the game itself ever brings in. With this, with the ultimate team aspect of the game. And for those not familiar with Ultimate Team, you basically draw cards to kind of build your own team. And obviously the better the cards are, the better the players that you have. You know, there's the gold and diamond levels of cards, the more likely you'll be able to win games. So it's very much pay to win. I mean, you can like accrue points to buy packs, but in reality, it's like a very slow build. So you really just have to spend money to get these like really good players in order to like win like more consistently.
And it's so frustrating when you have to spend $60 for the game in the first place. I mean, at least if the game is free, you kind of are able to chalk it up to, well, that's how they make their money, is through this system. But I think what really infuriates people is when they pay $60 for the game up front and then get this added on top of it. There was a similar kind of, like, it's not really loot boxes per se, but there was like a similar thing that comes to mind. It didn't make tonight's show roll, but there's a lot of gamers that are upset about the NBA 2K18, 19. One of those just really went on a deep sale for like $3 on Sony.
Oh, it was 19, yeah.
It was 19. And yeah. What the game's doing now is that there's advertisements you like have to sit through and watch, which if you only paid $3 for a game, okay, maybe that's a little bit understandable, but that's happening to the people that paid $60 to support it when it first came out too.
But and on top of that though, you know, so what? You don't have to charge $3 for the game. Make it a different, like, this is an advertised supported game or
within
something.
Within that resources. So anyway, yes. I'm sorry, not to deviate too much from the point you're trying to make, but I feel like the industry as a whole is very much like, how can we double dip this? And I think that's what happened in the case of NBA 2K19 was, okay, it's not loot boxes, but it was, okay, this game isn't selling anymore. We know we have a few more months until NBA 2K10 comes out. How are we going to, how do we make money off people still in these few months that are left? Oh, let's sell them and then get them on the ads. You know, there's a way to kind of make money there. And I think, you know, in some ways the loot boxes was, you know, how can we, you know, make more than $60 off a game?
Yep. And I fear, like, recently they just announced the new version of NHL 20. And they kind of just they revealed some of, like, the new features in it. A lot of fans are not happy with the game. But a lot of the stuff that they're kind of doing is kind of still gearing a lot more towards the loot box stuff. I'll post an article in the Discord after my call, but Game Informer wrote up this really big article about all the new features in it. And one of the features is that they've changed how the drawing of the Ultimate Team packs are. They made them more elaborate, more dazzling, more like visually appealing for when you get like a really good player. So, because they said that they really want to target the streamers and the people posting their videos of them opening packs on YouTube.
Hmm.
So to me, that kind of just like reminds me, and Rob, you kind of know this a little bit more because I know you've gone to Reno and all that, but it's like going to one of those fancy slot machines with the nice lights and the game characters on it. It's just like really, they're really just really pushing this really hard and just like trying to like make it as visually appealing so someone could like get addicted to just like the gratification portion of it.
It's so funny because I thought you were about to make the example, film the slot machine and then put that on YouTube. And I'm like, I've heard of people that do that, and I know somebody that went to like a convention in Vegas for one of those YouTubers that does like slot machine YouTubes and does very, very well at it and has like a great community and stuff. It's so interesting to me. But anyway.
There's YouTubers that just, they open up like $100 worth of card packs.
Yeah.
And post it on YouTube, and they get so many views, and it's like, it's just like people, you know, they say this in, you know, like the NHL Red and all that, you know, they want that kind of moment where they can get like that Mario Lemieux, like legendary players.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like people spend so much money.
OMG, I got what I wanted.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my friend, I'm going to let you go so we can squeeze in another call, but thank you so much for calling in tonight. Yep. I really appreciate it.
Yep.
It's always good to have you like give that perspective from the sports games, because you kind of know that's like our weak area here in studio. We don't always play the yearly, you know, NHLs and NBAs and so forth. We try to follow it and kind of like keep an eye on what's going on there. But I love to hear from the people who are like really in there playing them and kind of affected by, you know, some of these crappy loot box things. So thank you.
And this like quick little anecdote about sports games, you know, like sports games are just like anything, like any other game, you know, sports games are just like, you know, an RPG, there's strategy and everything involved. So we're all gamers. We all It's all games. So
that's right. Then there would have been a time in a day when I would have said, like, ah, fuck sports games. Fuck those. You know, but now I'm like, nope, they exist for a very distinct reason. There's people that are very into them and play them. I respect them. I just don't go in that space very often. But I think it's, you know, I'm glad it exists because it brings more gamers into the picture. So.
All right, cool. All right, guys. Take care, my friend.
All right. Bye. Let's try to squeeze in one more call here before we call it a night. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, this is Act Deft.
Hey, Act Deft. What's on your mind, buddy?
Well, I can talk about so many things right now, but I want to focus on Google Stadia.
Yeah, please.
Well, as you have may said already, and it has been said already, there are so many things with Stadia that won't work at all. I'm kind of trying not to be so negative about it, but it looks so good on paper, but the execution, it will probably be so really, really bad in so many aspects, especially in the infrastructure thing. Because even in the U.S. that probably has way better speeds than many other places in the world, it's still going to be it's such a hassle, especially with the bandwidth caps. But, yep. Like, for example, in Mexico, we don't have the bandwidth caps, at least for, like, home internet. But even then, we don't have, or at least not many people have the speed to handle something like Stadia.
To be fair, I mean, you're right. There's a lot of big cities in the U.S. who do have that speed. But there are places in remote Alaska, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado. There are places where people live in those places that even in California, there's rural parts that say everybody always thinks about, you know, the beach and Hollywood and all that stuff. But out in the Redlands, out on the coast, you can't get cell signal for shit out there. And the internet's not great either. So, you know, there's a lot of places in the U.S. that face a lot of the same issues, too. Not to poo-poo the points you're bringing up, but, you know, I think Google has to realize that they're launching something that's really only going to be usable in big cities with the big internet infrastructure, at least for now. I really wish Google wouldn't have given up on the problem of trying to get internet in more places around the country and so on, the worldwide, because it feels like they've given up on everything else, which is just irritating. It's a whole other issue.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating that they gave up on Google Fiber. I would have loved to seen that, like, in many other places, especially outside of the U.S., because, again, the internet here is not necessarily, like, really, really bad, but not many people have access to a good internet connection, and it's kind of something that if Google wants Stadia to work, they need to work on that and not necessarily to bring a complete experience, if we can say that, because, yeah, gaming in 4K, 60 frames per second and all that stuff, not necessarily all people want that. They just want to play. So they need to focus more on delivering the game service in a stable way rather than making it, like, sound, oh, you need all this. We need to push forward the graphics and how their game probably runs. If it's stable, if it runs even like a 30 FPS, it's going to be great. But it's still the thing with the bandwidth, the thing with the connections, the velocity you need to have, it's like not necessarily anyone has access to that. It's like...
Right.
Probably kind of necessary. It's good that there's an option, but not necessarily something that many people want. So, yeah.
Absolutely. What else was I wanting to say with this, with the whole... Oh, I was going to ask your opinion on, because I kind of feel like at the same time, we sometimes forget, Microsoft is kind of doing the same thing Google is. Not note for note, because obviously Microsoft isn't planning this launch of a separate thing. We know it's something they're going to build into probably Windows and Xbox consoles and so forth. But I can't help but feel like Microsoft is kind of waiting a little bit, and maybe they're implementing things a little slower to see how it's received, and then they might go for something full throttle that kind of goes with Stadia. I don't know. Have you been, like, paying attention to what Microsoft's doing? Do you have any opinion on their approach to games delivering with the xCloud?
I haven't seen that much, but from the looks of it, it looks like it's going to be a better service in terms of infrastructure. Although I'm still like on the fence about it, because if you like you need an Xbox console, or if you need something in particular to run xCloud, it's not gonna be that great either.
Yeah,
but I'm kind of looking forward to it, because at least I don't know, with Microsoft and what they're doing with Game Pass, it seems like a good option at least. But I need to like really to for Microsoft to show more and explain more about xCloud before making a decision or making a judgment on it.
I kind of think, though, like what they're doing and the reason why they have it, I think that's kind of what they're doing. I think they are purposely being a little bit more of a ninja about this. And Bobby points out xCloud already runs on Android phones. I think they are, but they're trying to kind of stealth test this and do this a little bit without shouting it from the hilltops. You know, we've got this streaming, come on board, do this. I think they're just kind of like slowly putting it out there to kind of see how it takes and who's mm-hmm. using it, to kind of like better like educate themselves to know then, okay, when we do want to take this to the next level and launch xCloud akin to what Google's doing with Stadia, they'll kind of know a little bit more and they'll have the proof behind it. Like, we've already been doing this for years and this is what our people say. That's just kind of the impression I'm getting from Microsoft, you know, and I don't want to come off like a Microsoft fanboy. But again, the reality is, you know, I know so many people that have kind of cut Microsoft out and they made that decision when, you know, the Xbox One launch was a disaster. And so they went with, you know, the Switch and the PlayStation 4, and that's fine. But I just think, especially where Microsoft's head is at now and how they're functioning as an organization and how Phil Spencer, you know, I'm just like, ooh, I'm so – like Microsoft is more fascinating to me in some ways than almost anybody else right now, because I'm like, how are they stacking the deck? What are they doing? What – you know, it's like trying to read somebody's poker hand.
It'll be interesting next year to see what's unveiled. So. Yeah. We'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, ActDeft, I got to let you go so we wrap up the show. But thank you so much, as always, for your call. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'll go, boys.
No problem. Take care, buddy. All right, and I think that is going to do it tonight. I'm sorry to anybody that didn't get through. But, you know, you can always send us an email, participate@orangeloungeradio.com, or however else you'd like to contact the show. Twitter's a great place, too. We'll read Facebook posts. We don't always interact there very well. I always get harassed from Facebook. People would like to hear from Orange Lounge Radio. And I'm like, all right, tune in Sunday night. we're not the best social media managers. I wish we had somebody that would like take on an internship, but at the same time, I want to pay people for their talents, but we don't have a lot of money either. So, I don't know what to do with that anyway. But that's a different issue. Last minute stories, Loki.
Yes, so there's an interesting rumor. We've been hearing stuff about how there's possibly going to be a Switch Mini or something like that, and there hasn't really been much information from that. Well, apparently there's this Chinese company, Hinosun or something like that, that has a clear protective case for a Nintendo Switch Mini, and it also includes a, you know, looks like a visualization of what it would look like. And they have this developed and they're selling it. So is it a thing that's going to be coming out? Maybe. It looks like it's based.
I referenced this a little bit earlier, but yeah.
So who knows? That's interesting, I guess. I guess we'll find out probably pretty soon. And then what else? I was going to say that, you know, we were talking about Stadia earlier. So one of the things about Stadia is we found out that Destiny 2, since that's going to be a title that's on Stadia, not cross-platform with PC, so you're not going to be able to play with PC players on that. It's going to be separate.
It's odd.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
That's it?
And then real quick, then there was a streamer who's raised $1 million for charity in 4 hours. So that's pretty awesome. I guess it was – they're saying that this – Ben Dr. Lupo, who was playing Fortnite, and $920,000 was donated during that time.
For what? Do we know the charity?
Yeah, during Fortnite stream.
No, what do we know the charity? Crazy.
Oh, the charity? St. Jude's.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Very worthy. That's great.
So pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen St. Jude's do like reach out to gamers to do streaming things. This is not uncommon for nonprofits to put themselves out there to entice people to do charity-thons because, you know, hey, they need to raise money. And so gaming marathons are one way to do it.
Apparently,
Extra Life does this too.
Apparently, during the whole Guardian Con charity stream, they had raised, they were hoping to raise $3 million, ended up raising $3.7 million. So,
wow.
Not bad.
That's very cool. All right. Well, that's going to about wrap it up for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Hey, thank you so much for tuning into this show and supporting us over the past 17 years and beyond. And I don't think we're running out of fuel yet, so we're going to keep this show going a good long time. And thank you guys, of course, for tuning in and your support. We really appreciate you guys being here. If you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, help us spread the word. Word of mouth spreading, telling a friend or two, that goes a long way. A nice 5-star review on iTunes also goes a very long way. The auto hosts on Twitch are like super great and really help out, especially with the
word of mouth. Yeah,
word of mouth and all that. Bobby in chat says RIP Hangouts on Air. Oh yeah, we didn't get to that. Google's speaking of things Google's killing, Hangouts on Air, they're gonna kill. I can't believe that. So many, I mean, they're probably just not making money off of it and that's why it's got to go, but I just, so many people I know use that. That's going to be detrimental. I'm sure alternatives will pop up, though. But anyway, thank you guys for being here on Twitch and supporting us. Really appreciate it. Let's go around and get everybody's final thought. Loki, your final thought.
My final thought is I'm hoping to work more on my game this week, and maybe I'll play something. Who knows?
All right.
I don't know. With the way my schedule's been, maybe not, but yeah, we'll see.
And my final thought is, I have to go to the restroom because I've drank this thing full of water. So we are ending the show right now. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you next time here at Orange Lounge Radio. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.